A moment of silence. I've just heard that you put so opinion Mulash Esmin Bob Shah has passed on, let alone about our silver medalist, Umulawaj, who passed on also, and then Ushenzo. Yesterday I had an opportunity on behalf of the Committee of Sports to issue a statement, and one of the head of station interviewed me. I couldn't finish that interview. It was so painful. Let's take this moment to stand up and give them a moment of silence. May their souls be in peace. Thank you.
Okay. Good morning, honorable members, our colleagues, ladies and gentlemen. I'm so sorry, really. I know that a person is so emotional. It's fine, sir. Maybe why the chickens and my coach today is still coming down, I know. Those who don't know her, you learn to know her. She's very much emotional, really. But just don't want to say so that you're fine. Maybe can I just give this opportunity to the two of our coaches to give us the apologies if ever they are. Mr. Brown,
thank you, Chairperson. We have apologies from Honourable Chanisha, as well as Honourable Lovemore, and then Honourable Koza and Punchani. They were going to arrive late, but they've arrived. Thank you.
It doesn't matter, Mr. Brown. I think he's now having a standing apology, you know. Whenever you don't see him, you just have to give an apology on his behalf. Thank you. Sports and recreation for the charges. I can then conclude again that even Ms. Mabiga is always absent, you know. So as long as you don't see him, you take it you take it for granted that he's not around. He's not coming now. Otherwise, thank you very much for that. To the two departments that we are having today, thank you ever so much. We believe this is one, again, of the most important meetings that we have. There is so much that needs to be done by these two departments, and we cannot shy away from the fact that what we are gathered here for today, it's one of the resolutions from the ruling party. It's one that also formed part of our manifestos, form part of the SONA, form part of our strategic plan, both departments, just to say, we need to make sure that school sports is one of the things that is prioritized. We need to make sure that each and every learner out there is exposed to whatever kind of sports, whatever sporting coach has facilities and opportunities may allow. So really, we know the history, where we come from. We know that most of our schools, rural areas, there have been no exposure at all when it comes to the issues of sport, and it's very important. You are always saying the healthy mind will always be found in the health of the body. So what are we doing to make sure that we cultivate that part of the healthy body? And also, we know the MOUs that have been signed since 2011. So today we are saying we are here all together with a keen interest to know what is happening. Both departments have to take us on board. We need to know what is happening. What's the progress? How far are we? What are the challenges that might be there? We always talk of issues of infrastructure. Do we have playgrounds? We can sit here in the bathrooms and discuss and say our wish list, but is it something that is achievable? If not, what might be those challenges and how can we overcome them. We're talking of schools here, school sports. Do we have facilitators? We have teachers to do that. What is it that you are going to do to make sure that we train those teachers, to facilitate those teachers? What is it that you are going to make sure that both departments will go down there, make sure that everyone understands his or her role and what is it that we can take? We know it's going to. Through this process of making sure that we realize our dreams, there's so many sacrifices even on the side of the teachers, side of the sports people, that we need to put in. But working together today, let us try and make sure, let us try and talk about these things and have a plan of action from today onwards. What is it that we can do together to make sure that we realize the dreams that we have about our country, about the school? We know we have people that are there, but are we judging them well? Do we have physical teachers to do that, or we just only have got physical education in at school, but they're not being utilized the way they're supposed to do? So I hope and believe that through this meeting today, we are going to realize and we are going to have that proof of action that is going to take us forward. Our deputy minister, who is also part of this program, and it's one of his programs to give them this one when it comes to school sports. The first apologize, she will be joining us a little bit later, around 10 or half a 10, because there is another meeting with him, so he is engaging. But he said he's been very much interested in this, and when he arrives, we will give him a chance just to tell us what is it that he has on his mind. But we are very grateful again. On the side of sports, we do have the DG who is going to lead us in the discussions moving forward, and our Department of Education, we do have our senior officials again who are going to lead us on the discussions and the deliberations on this topic for today. So, before I hand over to the presenters, my co-chairperson, are you okay to say your opening words, then we hand over to the presenters for today. Thank you.
In the transition, now there's nothing that I can say. I'm just happy that at last we are together in this new parliament, that we will take care of whatever gets that we are having together. In the transition, can you continue?
I will be biased, fine. I'm from the Portfolio Committee of Education, and the English way is very short because at home. No, I'm joking. Which person is ready to start? We are waiting for both departments today, who are both at home. So, but if education is ready to come up with their foundation, allow me to give the church to education so that afterwards we get support. And after both presentations, we then interact with the presentations so that our discussions can go that way. Education, are you ready? Oh, honourable members, I know this thing of introduction, it does waste time, but at the same time, it does assist. Because it's very difficult to be in the same room, in the same room with people that you don't even know, we don't even know itself how to relate when we talk to them. Yes, with the Department of Education, I know we know each other, but if it's proper, just quickly, we just go through my introduction so that we just have an idea of whom is in the house. I'll start with myself on my course. So I'm Nomad Velogina, Chairperson of Basic Education Portfolio Committee. Then I will give it to you, so then we'll meet our coach members. Thank you. Okay. The chairperson of here I'm with the chairperson of sports and recreation, Honorable Beauty Bulani. So that at least you know. Can I hand over to Portfolio Committee members of sports, introduce yourself? Wait a bit. Sports, can you introduce yourself? Thank you.
I am Bongi Zoma, a member of the Sports and Recreation Committee.
Good morning, my name is Beth Adams. I'm a member of the Sports and Recreation Portfolio. Thank you.
Good morning, my name is Dut Manana, a member of the Sports and Recreation Portfolio Committee.
Shelly Malaki, a member of the Sports and Recreation Committee.
Good morning, I'm Stella Biga, the member of Sports and Recreation. Also the alternate member in education.
Karen Bergman, a member of the Sports Committee.
Karen Mutega, member of Rural Sports and Education.
Good morning, Chair. My name is Kai, a member of the Sports Committee. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Tebo Chebeha. I'm the content advisor for Sports Education.
Booms and Tegazi, Professor on Sports and Education.
This is Manyaba Masanyana from Sports and Education.
Good morning, Chairperson and members. My name is Honorable Tintu Mokota. I'm from the Basic Education Portfolio Committee. I'm the whip there. Thank you.
Good morning, Honorables. My name is Joyce Person, member of the Education Portfolio. Sure.
Morning, Honorable Members. My name is Nicole Machete, member of the Portfolio Committee of Education.
Good morning, everybody. Sonia Bosha, member of the Basic Education Portfolio.
Morning. I'm Tramlan Khosa, Basic Education Committee.
Morning. I'm Timothy Khosa, member of the Basic Education.
I'm Basic Education member. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Dennis Bandy, content advisor for the Portfolio Committee of Basic Education.
Morning, honorable members. I'm Madime Chakirana, Professor of Basic Education.
Morning, honorable members and guests. Llewellyn Round, committee secretary for the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education.
Morning, Chair. My name is Alec Mulemi. I'm the Director General of the Department of Sports and Recreation, South Africa.
Good morning, Chair, and all the members of the Portfolio Committee. My name is Oyem Joe, Chief Director responsible for mass participation in Sports and Recreation, South Africa. Thank you.
Good morning, Chair and Honourable Members. Bernard Desmonostoy, Chief Director, Strategic Support within the Department of Sport and Recreation. Thank you.
Good morning, Members. I am Luz Botolu. I'm the Director for Enrichment and Sports in Education.
Good morning, Members. I'm Jajalina Watson, Director for SEP Curriculum.
Good morning, I'm Randall Whittle, DG for Care and Support.
Good morning, Honorable Chair and Members. I am Randall van den Heuvel, the PLO of Minister Angie Motshekga. Thank you.
Good morning, Sister and Honorable Members. I am Zwi Rekala, Head of Office, the Basic Education Minister.
Thank you, Sir President. My name is Ruan Mahadali, I'm in the Office of the Director General.
I'm done with the introductions.
Thank you very much.
Oh. Thank you. My name is Kinesu Musenu, Sports and Recreation, South Africa.
Good morning. My name is Themba Mthethwa. I'm Content Advisor for the Select Committee on Education and Recreation.
Fine. Thank you very much for the introduction. I know others did not introduce themselves, so thank you very much. Can I now give this opportunity to the Department of Education, Basic Education, to lead us on the presentation?
Thank you, Chairperson. Honorable Chairperson, I must indicate that technology seems to be failing us. We're trying to connect so that it can be reflected. It seems not to be working. I'm not certain whether we can go ahead and do the presentation. We can go ahead. What's your advice?
Can I just say, you do have copies of the presentations with you, of the presentations with you. Why the technician will be working on the technology, yeah, can you allow the presenter to continue with the presentation? Is everyone having a copy? This is the one from the Department of Basic Education. No. It's only education. Do you have extra copies, Mr. Brown? Okay, we'll send it. Just in case, just so by your hand, we'll distribute the copies, can we allow almost committed to continue with the presentation. With members of with education members, we have the presentation from ESWAS. Okay, thank you. Cindy, oh, Cindy, no, we want the fun. The basic education method. Presentation is looking to the inputs on doping physical education and inter-school program. Sample follow committee 28th October 2014. Yeah. That's right. Okay, thank you very much. I think you can start.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson. In starting with the presentation, I really would like to outline how we're going to deal with the information on school sports today and what has been required to be shared with the honorable members in the committee. I'm going to do the presentation that is going to speak to the issue of doping, which is dealing with drugs in sport, physical education, as well as the inter-school program. Other areas are going to be judged by the Director General from Sports and Recreation, because in some areas we do work together in that essence. So we've done the joint presentation that covers the areas that we work together on in terms of the delivery of school sport. But I'm going to just highlight those two areas which are critical and are dealt with by basic education, if we can allow that, Honorable Chairperson. I'll run through the presentation because I've got about 30 slides, so I'll just run through the presentation if members will allow me to do that. What are the main goals that we have in the Department of Education, how we react to the issue of drugs in general? We aim to retain our learners in schools, also to create a safe and supporting learning environment that will ensure that we have a quality education. And one of the objectives that are very critical is that all our schools are alcohol and drug-free zones, and we would like really to emphasize around prevention when it comes to drugs and alcohol as well, so that we are able to enhance the learning, the retention of learners in our schools, and also to enhance the outcomes of ensuring that we have quality area-based education that is given to our learners. We acknowledge that in schools there is a problem of alcohol and drug use, and most of that are at the developmental stage. We agree that our learners do experience drug and alcohol at an early age, where we have some of the drug causes, gateway drugs, where learners will start experimenting, but it then develops and it becomes a problem. So our emphasis is mainly to curb it while it's starting at a developmental aspect. It does compromise teaching learning a big deal. It also compromises the safety of learners in schools, because we must understand that, you know, teaching and learning will be affected if our learners are taking drugs or even taking alcohol. So our strategy is really to respond to those areas right at the beginning of drug testing. The strategy offers also a comprehensive guidance for prevention and management of drugs and alcohol in schools. That's a strategy that we have developed in the department that speaks to how the system needs to respond to the learners who are taking drugs and alcohol or experimenting with drugs and alcohol. It is in this instance that within the National Drug Master Plan, we have included some information on how the system should respond to this, and also the CSEL framework, which is care and support, the teaching and learning framework that we have developed. It speaks within itself around the issues of safety. It has an element that speaks to drugs and alcohol. We've done a lot of work in terms of putting the documents together, and we are amending some of the areas that I'm going to speak to when it comes to doping, so that the strategy does not just respond to ordinary drugs as well as alcohol. It has to have this element of doping as well. The review that we've done with the safety officials as well as life skills officials, we've also got the strategy to be out today to be reviewed by different branches to see to it that it covers all the areas that you might not, you know, have covered in the initial strategy. So the whole strategy speaks to all these other things. Just to highlight some of the things I'm going to dwell on this slide. The slide just highlights how the problem is within the school sector, with the study that has been conducted, and how the prevalence of some of the specific drugs amongst female learners as well as male learners. It just gives us how the problem is and how we are responding to the strategy that we have. As you can just see, that the use of alcohol in this instance is the one that is topping the charts with 13% of learners using using alcohol at school. We are in the process of looking at how prevalent doping is in this instance, so that it also gets to be included within the strategy. Quite clearly, the consequences of learners using drugs is that it has that academic performance. Any learner who is using drugs and alcohol will definitely not perform very well, because it will be affected, you know, by issues of absenteeism as well as drop out if they get to a point where they cannot deal with the academic stuff that they need to deal with at the school level. It also has mental as well as physical health consequences, where our learners who are smoking are at risk of heart disease, cancer, and all other respiratory diseases linked to smoking, as well as those that are using alcohol. You know, there is evidence out there that indicates that, you know, they are prone to some of the diseases. If you talk about cancer, talk about mental illness and all other things. And those, you know, some of them, you know, who parents probably are affected by the use of alcohol, then they will have, you know, problems with the experience. It also speaks to crime and violence, which is also in at the fifth level. And when you get to, you know, check the basis of that, you can certainly see that drugs do play a major role. In all the drug-ridden areas, that is where you find that violence is very prevalent around those schools. But what is also critical is that government is spending a lot of money trying to address, you know, issues of drugs and alcohol. It puts a lot of burden economically to the system in a way where the issues of treatment has to be looked into, as well as other areas that are supposed to be assisting in using the very same amount of money to boost education, but then it has to be used to deal with these aspects. Chairperson, allow me to move very quickly because I need to get to the point of doping, which is what we asked to present here. Here we're also indicating within the strategy itself how we are. Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and apologies, Honorable Members, for not explaining some of the terms used in the presentation. I apologize for that. But epidemiology is basically the patterns, the causes, and the effects of using drugs as it has been put in the slide. To say this is how the diseases are occurring in different areas. I'll try to move a bit quicker. Look at the pillars of the strategy. I must indicate, Chairperson, that we do have the strategy. Probably we provide that to all members so that they can also read at their leisure of what is it that is included in the strategy while we're still, you know, working in terms of getting, you know, doping as part of the strategy and how we respond to that as well. The pillars of the strategy look at what are the enabling environments. If you look at what policy issues we can be able to put in terms of dealing with drugs and alcohol, and what form of partnerships are we forming with other bodies that are outside of education sector that are also dealing with drugs, so that when we respond, we don't respond as education, but we respond as a society that is also concerned, that is affected, you know, by drugs as well as alcohol. Institutionally, what is already in place in terms of the research that has been done, the monitoring and evaluation processes that are already there, so that we pick it back and so that it all covers some of the areas that are affecting us. And what are the primary prevention activities? So support as part of the co-curricular activity that is there in our schools. And Chairperson must indicate that we have to call extracurricular activities when we talk about sports and all activities. However, we've moved in terms of using the terminology, which does affect how we look at sport and how we look at other activities. As part of the core curriculum, that's the center of what we do in terms of the curriculum. And we always link what we do as part of the primary prevention of the strategy. So all these other activities that we have, you know, your peer education programs, we push the content of drugs and alcohol as part of the base of what is done there. In any sporting event that we have, whether we're doing it as part of the inter-school, we have all these elements as part of the life skills program that we infuse in our curriculum. So as children are playing, they also need to learn in the process, and that is what the strategy is talking to us about. The early detection, specifically around the strategy, what are the early warning systems? How do you see the child is using drugs? That's the information that we're sharing with our teacher as part of the teacher training aspect of life orientation, and we wanted to know and how to see the learners who start experimenting with drugs. What are the warning signs and what should they do? That also includes the issue of drug testing. How to influence the drug testing? What are the regulations that are in place for testing to take place in terms of the sector? One of the most important elements of the pillar is the treatment, care, and support. Because it also speaks about detecting that the children are in drugs, whether we're talking about, you know, illegal drugs, but they are using drugs, but how do you assist them? Because us, while the learners are still at a schooling sector, within that learning environment, it should be a protected environment. That's it. If you say, what's the problem, this is how you get assistance. So the pillar has those elements that are, in terms of the referral, who is assisting in this instance, and how do we help the learners that are now caught up in this problem of using drugs and alcohol, and how do we help them within the system, where the treatment services that they can be able to access. It may not necessarily be at a school setup, but it has to be accessible for those learners. So the one we determine that they are using drugs or they are at the verge of using drugs, then they get the assistance that they require. So those are the four pillars that we work with. In terms of progress, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, within our provincial implementation plan, or within our provinces, they must include the teaching of drugs and alcohol and along the lines of the pillars. One of the things that are encompassed within the life orientation work that is being done. The submission quarterly basis by provinces gives us information on what is the prevalence of substance abuse within provinces, and we also include within the international days against drug abuse and food trafficking. We use all the information that we are sending to the two provinces for them to be part and parcel of awareness of the drug abuse and so forth, as well as other competitions that I'm saying. As I indicated, that within the co-curricular space, that is where we really push this information so that at least our learners are covered by the first two pillars before we go to treatment and support in the other. We want them not to use drugs. That's the message that we're sending out. However, when we have learners who are experimenting, we also want avenues of getting them help that is needed. So the wellness programs, as well as educational programs, which is now inclusive of doping, are the main drivers of strategy. And then we want to include some of the remote associations around doping as well, the referral system, the range of offense, as well as the situation of the punitive measures, if there are any. So those are the things that we are currently dealing with organizations like FACE as well as the Department of Sport and Education to say those are the things that must form part of the strategy so that it's clear to all the learners that when I found doping, what is the process, what is the next step, how are you going to be assisted, or how do we make sure that you don't even start doping in that instance. As I've used the word doping much, the clear explanation of the word is that if you use them to performance enhancing drugs in board, we refer that as doping. We are specific that the substance that is being used, it should be a substance that enhance, the performance of an athlete. That's what makes it wrong in all areas. Because when we mean any athlete that uses a drug, whether it's a learner or it's a professional athlete in that instance, will not perform under normal circumstances in the range that they're performing has taken those drugs. That is why we are careful in terms of, the amendment that we are infusing in the strategy, that it has seriously looked at the learner who is a young child who just needs to grow and has an aspiration in that sense. There's a lot of health risks of using this performance enhancing drugs, which I'm going to speak to a little bit later, and it also affects the way we need to look at sport as a sport. Once the drug evolves, then obviously the element of an athlete being a talented athlete then is under question mark, because then there are drugs that, that is enhance the kind of performance that we actually end up seeing out today. So the testing of drugs, it also should be in line with all the guides for drug testing in public schools, which is part of the strategy that I spoke about. So the national strategy as a whole, we look at all the procedures that are used when testing for drugs in sport and what are the outcomes. But more especially, the care and support aspect that we want to increase so that it's clear even from parents. Because the difference between a child that uses drugs just for fun and the child that uses drugs in sport is that there is an element of family support on the side of parents, would like to see their children, getting better and getting selected and getting forward with sports. At the same time, the coach is also involved there. Therefore, it's not just a child experimenting on their own. There is that other element. So we need to carve within the strategy all those areas you know, that is to that aspect. Our approach in all the learners that are either dealing with drugs or are in the rush of dealing with drugs is that it should be a restorative justice system that is used, because the new spaces will always be protected. However, it must have all the necessary rules that will protect any of our learners from using drugs. In terms of the safety measures for public schools, we have to take all the schools to be drug free. Therefore, anything that happens at a school level that has to do with drugs, then we have a very clear focus on how it needs to be dealt with. The amendments that I spoke about and the inputs that we are currently dealing with in terms of the strategy, we follow the normal route of having all the stakeholders in education interacting with the new amendments that we need to put. So that whether we talk about school governing bodies, we talk about parents, we talk about any other stakeholder within the sector, they must understand that this is how we are dealing with doping in schools, and these are the measures that are going to be in place should a child be found doping. So that's an educational aspect that is key. At the same time, all these processes, we are looking at them not having detrimental effect in terms of the child's future, because as I said, we're not talking about a professional athlete in this instance. We're talking about learners. Therefore, our emphasis is really going to be around education and then continue with testing, because that we need to get to that point with the educational aspect having taken significance in terms of understanding what is and what is not. Because at the end of the day, we need our sports, whether it's happening at the interclass level or it's happening at the interschool or whatever level, we need to have it as clean as possible, because that's where everything begins. If we leave it at that point, then it means then only focus when they are at a national level and when they are at a national level or international level, then it's really going to give us problems when we've not done any work below that. So there should be, as I said, clear treatment, take approach to at least found doping, as well as parental involvement and consent before we do any sort of administering tests. They also need to understand that when the learners are going through this whole process, this is what it means. And then the educational aspect, as I said, we are dealing with curriculum, and to us to have this aspect as part of the syllabus, as we have currently a topics around alcohol and drug abuse within the curriculum. I'm not going to repeat, Chairperson, if you can allow me to push through some of these guiding principles, because I think I've touched on some of them as I was speaking. With your permission, can I continue? When we come to the state of sports, I've indicated that the Department of Basic Education upholds the spirit of sport aspect, which says our sport should be clean, our sport should be speaking to the inculcating of good human relations. It should really promote the human spirit that should prevail around all the learners that are involved in sport and those that are not involved in sport. In fact, it's culture, not just sport, but in all the arts and cultural activities that we have in schools, it has to have that element prevailing. So in all our educational programs, that's a platform that we use to bring information that will prepare our young athletes, to engage in teamwork and have that spirit of sport. I've already covered some of these aspects. The use of the steroids by teachers is really affecting physically their growth and their performance in a sense. It might be because it's enhancing the performance, but it doesn't in the long run, because it has negative effect in terms of it. So that information we want our learners to have and understand before we even do any of that things. Around the issue of the Schools Act, I must just indicate that we have already started the discussion that we've had, and we are going to interact with some of the amendments within the Act that are going to assist in terms of making sure that the strategy that we are talking about really finds itself working within the schools, and then the tracking, when it's done, it's according to the law. Once that is done, our local service department will then take over in terms of guiding us of what needs to be done and how it's going to be done. So that is still a process aspect. As well as the stakeholder relations, with such stakeholder relations, the involvement of all other parties in terms of what we are doing, because we do the whole the first analysis of interacting with stakeholders and get input, but then the strategy is going to be shared amongst other entities that are having interest in this area, so that every other aspect is covered within the strategy. So they won't do the actual change in amendments within the Act, but already have a document that is going to help us to drive the process and have voting as the included aspect and have all the preventative measures outlined within the strategy, so that once that is done, then we are certain that we have covered, you know, all the pillars of the strategy, and our learners are really going to benefit out of the program with knowledge that is going to help them, you know, to stay away from drugs, because that's a message that we're sending out to them. Our learners must really stay away from drugs, whether it's for their own experimental aspect, or it is for, you know, use in terms of enhancing themselves to perform better and be selected. Because in most instances, as I indicated earlier on, it's not just learners doing this. It's mainly, you know, there is some element of other people who would like to see the learners selected and getting, whether it's by force buzzery in this instance, or it is also, you know, some recognition that comes with being involved in sport. That is the one input. I'm not sure the person whether it allow me to get into this allocation and complete everything. Okay, thank you very much. Honorable members, I would like to quickly run through the role of DBE in delivering the curriculum-oriented physical education as well as school sport. As I indicated, the second session will be inclusive of the work that we do together, and we outline mainly the school sport and speak to the MOU in terms of what needs to be done, which is going to be done by my colleague, Director General from Sport and Education. We are indicating in this instance that physical education before 1994 was an approved subject and was approached differently by different education departments. It was a subject in this instance. However, we are acknowledging that, you know, the lack of qualified teachers as well as the resources has really affected how physical education is being implemented in schools in different provinces. You know, more time is given to subjects like mathematics and as well and sciences. And in of late, we have the subjects like technical mathematics, you know, being introduced, and also taking, you know, a bit of time within you know the curriculum. And then in some instances, it then gave physical education, you know, not so much time in terms of the interaction. However, with the new curriculum patch, the policy, it does give physical education time that she has to be put in the timetable. I'm going to show how that is done. So each and every school is expected to put time aside for sports in their school program. That is what we have indicated. However, in terms of implementation, it's a different story that we are also concerned about. And then we are doing something about it. I'm going to also show in the following slides. The life skills, which refer to especially in the foundation phase and later life orientation, is central to the whole development of learners, because it does not only speak about specific subjects, but it looks at the social, personal, as well as intellectual and emotional growth of our learners. So physical education covers the pillar of physical growth for our learners, because, you know, they can engage in mathematics and science and become good scientists. But if they are not able to fit within society in terms of the skills that they need, then it becomes a problem. You know, we have a doctor who really cannot even get, you know, the patients, you know, to relax and then be able to diagnose them in that instance. So we are saying it's important, you know, for all our schools to realize that life orientation is not just a subject that must just be thrown and be given to whoever doesn't have much to do in the field. It's the pillar of the growing of the learner, because it looks at all these other aspects. When the person is stressed, you know, there are elements within life orientation that assist on how a person should deal with the stress. And physical education is one of those things. If you feel the heat so much, you know, go to the gym and you relax, and you do the sports that you like, you relax, you watch. So those are the most important life skills that our learners need within the sector. So that's why we feel it is very important that it must be taken by each and every school very seriously. It covers the development of skills, knowledge, the values, as well as the attitude that help our learners to make informed decisions about what they want to do, their responsibility, as well as their taking care of themselves, you know, in the environment, the work environment, when they aspire them to do that, but they need to be able to cope with everything that they do. The skills that they gain from life orientation are not the skills that can be taken, you know, for granted by any other school. Now we have done allocation, which indicates that there is not time that has been given to all the girls from the R up to grade 12, and all of our learners are expected to participate in physical education once a week, and that is fit in the timetable. The foundation says the current time that is allocated is 2 hours per week, which means they go through all the programs. Every week they have to engage in physical education. In the intermediate phase, senior phase, as well as FPT band, which is intermediate is grade 4, 5, and 6, senior phase is 7, 8, 9, FPT is grade 10 to grade 12. So every week they have an hour allocated in the timetable, and that they have to deal with topics that are related to that are physical education based. So the purpose of this presentation, all physical education periods focus on the practical, physical, and mass participation movement activities for enjoyment as well as for enrichment purposes. But they also have physical education tasks that they need to deal with, which is also assessed. And all the girls are doing this throughout the whole year. They do it in each and every quarter, and there are allocated topics that they need to cover there. Except for grade 12, where they only do, you know, the three school terms, and then the last term, that's when they should complete all PET, which is the physical education tasks that are given. Then the learner participation as well as movement in these tasks is the one that is assessed through the observation as well as reported on at the end of each term. Then the focus of our assessment, especially in the grade 4 to grade 12, which is low intermediate phase, senior phase as well as FEP. It looks at the frequency of participation during the period. It also looks at the outcome of movement in performance. I must be quick to say this is what we've structured for schools to help them plan for physical education. However, this time allocation, you know, for the educator who is clear about what needs to be done, is not enough time allocated. But the educator who is really struggling with the content, with the understanding of physical education, this time allocated, you know, really becomes, it's an hour a week, but it's a lot if they do not know what to do. Hence, that's where we come in when we look at what needs to be done and what are the changes. I must also indicate that these PET, physical education tasks, are also moderated by the heads of department or the subject head in each and every school. And then they also have to do the same thing by observing the learners doing the actual performance. That is why when we do the monitoring and evaluation of physical education, we want to see what the head of department has done in terms of this PET, of the task that has to be performed by learners. So the information has to come from that head of department, which is the HOD in regard at a school level, not the head of department in the province. And they have a checklist where they check what the evidence that has been required, what has been done, and the teacher reports and keeps the information with the principal in the school. Maybe the question would be what then happens to schools, special schools, that they not, you know, be able to participate in the structured tasks of physical education. The policy makes provision that each and every learner in the system must be accommodated within the physical education. So for special schools, it depends on the learner's ability. We want schools to focus on what learner can do in those special schools as opposed to what they cannot do. So the tasks that they perform have to be, you know, modified according to the physical ability of those learners, so that they also, if you talk about vocation, then the task that they need to do, the activities will then be modified such that, you know, it accommodates what the needs of those learners, as opposed to trying to make them to do what they cannot do. Make an example, if learners are supposed to, you know, they are physically disabled, but they are supposed to be out there and run around. If they cannot run, they are sitting in wheelchairs, the task must be modified such that it accommodates them, but they are able to do the task that is, that is part of the physical education work. If they are too vigorous, in some instances, you know, then they have to be modified in that sense. So there is an element of inclusivity within the physical education program. And as I've also indicated, that the teacher will get the supporting staff to decide on how to modify the program, whether it requires mild, moderate, or limited participation. But at the end of the day, they must benefit and they must do. So in other words, there is no school that can claim not to do physical education on the basis of what is provided by the policy, because there is room for them to modify and do it in according to the learner needs. The goal is to ensure that all the learners are in progressing and have some form of success within the program. Coming to some of the challenges, Honorable Chairperson and Honorable Members, we are the first ones to acknowledge that not all schools have got basic equipment and facilities to present the movement activities that are required. We are also acknowledging that some of the teachers, if not most of the teachers, are really not trained to do the physical education. Hence our focus in terms of what is the way forward and what is it that we are still grappling with as department. But we are training teachers in terms of improvising and the use of equipment. We are also at this point in time working directly with our districts to get an understanding that whatever equipment, whether sporting equipment that is available at a school, is not only for use of sport, it must also be used for physical education, because that's a base. You know, if children are seeing a rugby ball, for an example, they must not only think the rugby ball is only used in the rugby field. They must get to, you know, get basic rules within physical education while they're in the classroom. So that ball that belongs to that school should be used for both physical education as well as for sport, because it then gives great background of each and every sporting code. We are also, as assistant educators in the training itself, that it's not only, you know, with the sporting code. So we've got also indigenous studies that, you know, can be used as part of the activities within physical education. And then it helps us later on when we do sport, because within sport we've got indigenous games. You know, it helps us in that instance when we want our learners now to get to the competitive aspect of sport, you know, to deal with that. So we've got different initiatives that the Director General is going to speak to when we look at shortfall that we have around equipment and facilities in schools, that once we've made the provision, our expectation is that those schools that have been provided with facilities as well as equipment will be the ones that are really going to provide us with enough evidence that says there is work that is being done there, there is physical education, and there is sport, because they also do not have any other excuse that they can put forward around the resources and so forth. I've spoken to this Honorable Chairperson. The shortages of teachers with PE-specific qualification. We've done the training of educators in terms of the life skills and life orientation curriculum component, but we're also having, you know, with the support from UCF, Sports Tech, Discovery Vitality, as well as Healthcare Foundation, in terms of training additional educators around physical education. I must indicate that we are going to provide honorable members through the Secretariat with the annual report that we put together that analyzes each and every province in the work that has been done in terms of training those educators, as well as the database of the educators that has already been trained, especially by the Emory College and so forth. It is a drop in the ocean if you look at where the problem is. That is why when you talk about upscaling of the training that we are looking at as a joint task team, we are looking at how to maximize the training of the available educators so that this space for us is covered and covered accordingly. As I indicated that we are currently...
Can I just interject to that?
Yes.
Because as a committee, we always make sure that we don't affect a trend like we've got a shortage and like what, you know.
Okay.
But we've partly covered me, so we are still going to make a submission
on how much shortage is, because really it's good for us to get the picture if you're saying we've got a shortage.
What is it that you're talking about?
You know, how many teachers you might have to exercise, but give us an idea. What shortage are we talking about? What resources that are there, even the physical resources that you just give us a picture for us to know is what is it that we're working on. So, yeah. And maybe you cannot do that now, but at least we have promised us that we have to wait to finish us with that information. It will be of importance to us.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. We'll definitely do that. Within the training of educators, we've indicated to provinces that it must be prioritized in each and every province, as well as the training of curriculum advisors and the sport coordinators. But they need to understand what is available, what are they monitoring, and be able to provide us with correct statistics that we can be able to verify and say, you know, definitely if this is what is happening, it is happening in this area, and then provide accurate statistics and accurate data, you know, that is quantifiable. Then we can basically say, are we on the right track? Are we moving forward? Or there is still a lot to be covered. But most importantly is to support the monitoring and evaluation of the curriculum delivery that needs to be there. Can I, at the close of this presentation, Honorable Chairperson, allow me to speak to the inter-school program, which is what the Department of Basic Education is responsible for. We have partnered with UNICEF, and we have a program which is called Young Heroes Program that was rolled out from 2011. Our focus mainly was to put all the systems in place at that level to ensure that the inter-school, what is happening within school, the inter-class, the houses as we used to do them even in the past, you know, that culture is brought back to our schools and it's done accordingly. We've developed the template that will help schools to get the information that is needed, and that is also will be covered within what that we have done in the document that I'm going to provide. And it provides the base for each implementation within the inter-house to the inter-class, you know, program. And we are looking at getting PE lessons as aligned within that process. So that if it's done and it's done through physical education, then we are just certain that the time that is allocated will then be dealt with in that format. It's both mass participating as well as competitive sport within the school in this instance, where the school will engage itself and at the end of the day be able to do inter-school, where now they play with other schools within their vicinity and within their cluster. Then we've done the training around the league implementation, which also includes inter-school programs. This is why now our focus is around monitoring and support for that. The sport for development program as well, it empowers teachers with skills in terms of managing the inter-school program. Our teachers, as they're the ones who manage or are managing the inter-school program, they have to have enough skills to know what is needed and be able to keep the data that we use to monitor the work that has been done. As I said, administrative templates as well as the monitoring tools have been developed for us to be able to keep adequate progress record, which is kept in the school and when needed given to us. And we're also, you know, capacitating our district, because that's a key area which is closer to the schools. If the data is kept at the district level, then at least we know that, you know, it's when you even go for verification processes, we then work directly with the district. And in closing, I must indicate, Honorable Chairperson, that we have a meeting tomorrow, which is the first of its kind, with all our provincial DDGs, the chief directors, as well as coordinators who are dealing with school sports, because this is the line of march that we want to feed to the system, so that it is something that is not just happening in some corners of the country, but something that is happening in all the area, all the 83 districts that we have in the country. So that meeting is really critical for us as a department, because it will really be unpacking what is needed, so that the monitoring is not only done at a national level, but it's done at a district level where it matters, where the learners are, and where the mass participation program needs to be vibrant and ensure that really we are able to, when we do the selection, we select the right crop. We are not leaving, you know, all the other learners at the bottom there. Thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. That's my conclusion.
Thank you very much. It was a long presentation, naturally. I'm suspecting that the members, they were taking notes. I want that at this time, thank you, Chairperson. My apology. In a few 20 minutes, I'm getting there now. I'm thinking that let's take another department. In order that when you are raising questions, it must offer two presentations. Let me give it to Uji. Also, we'll be taking notes on other members. Thank you, Uji.
Thank you, Chairperson and honorable members. Our school sport program is hinged on three important pillars. The first pillar being physical education, the second pillar being the top schools league format, and the third pillar being the select team championships. And in my presentation, I would attempt to cover a little bit how we are faring in as far as each of the three pillars are concerned. But I would not dwell on physical education because PD has covered that already and has highlighted issues related thereto and the shortcomings and challenges related to this specific issue. Honorable members would recall that in 2011 November, we had a national sport endeavor which was subsequently followed also by the National Sport and Recreation Endeavor, which adopted the National Sport and Recreation Plan. Within the Sport and Recreation Plan, school sport was identified as the bedrock of our entire development continuum and as a basis on which all else depends on in order to succeed from a sport point of view. And we then immediately towards the end of November prepared a memorandum of understanding between the two departments, basic education, sport and recreation, and we signed this memorandum, the two ministers signed. And this memorandum committed the two departments to provide a seamless program of sport in schools, and this was also immediately followed by the integrated school sport framework, which was jointly developed by the two departments to ensure seamless implementation of sport in schools. This department has to contribute towards the joint responsibilities and to focus on their responsibilities in as far as implementation of the tool. Now, since then, the directors general of the two departments met to finalize an operational plan and also to establish the structures necessary to implement the strategy and to have stakeholder forums on which we can consult on. These structures are seamless from the lowest form designed to operate both in schools, within schools at the local level, at the district level, provincially and also nationally, at the pinnacle of it being the Joint National Task Team, which is co-chaired by both the two departments. And this Joint National Task Team, on a quarterly basis, it gets to be a standard. And it is, when it is expanded, it is constituted by school sport officials, both from national as well as provincial, by the departments of sport and recreation, South Africa and basic education, the members of the 16 priority sport codes, as well as national federations of sport. And the forum meets quarterly, as I've indicated, and it is tasked with the responsibility to ensure synergy, better coordination of delivery of school sport programs, and to ensure that we can duplicate all this, both at the provincial as well as district levels. Since then, the clarity of roles and responsibilities of both the extended joint national task team as well as the extended provincial joint task teams have been crystallized, and they are contained within the framework. Now, that framework
NDA is as follows, that finalization of the policy of school sport is the responsibility of basic education. As you have heard, that has been done now, and the policy has now been finalized. Secondly, based on the finalization of guidelines for agency supporting the delivery of school sport was our responsibility, and we finalized this responsibility in that regard. And we now are facing a bit of a challenge in terms of implementation. We need all stakeholders to follow that responsibility metrics as well as the guidelines as they are published and gazetted. Again, there was the issue of the establishment of school sport code committees to support the delivery of school sport as well as the delivery of leagues at the local level, and this is the responsibility of the DE. We still have some difficulties there with the structures, some of them largely non-existent, and we are struggling to get many of them to be operational. Again, there was an issue of ensuring the delivery of well-organized intra- and inter-school sport activities, and we have had the report of DBE and the work they do in respect of implementation of the intra- as well as the inter-school and also their partnership with UNICEF. We also had a responsibility together with provincial governments and sports federations to identify talent at inter-district school tournaments for further development through the academic system. Right now, we are implementing this talent identification program at the national as well as only at the provincial level. It isn't happening at the district level. And it is truly because there is no capacity. The country has no capacity of sufficient talent scouts to be in all the districts at the same time when the tournaments are taking place. And many of the 16 priority clubs themselves do not have accredited talent scouts. We only have this in about six of the coaches. And since then, we have been selecting learners only at the national as well as the provincial level. Again, there was a responsibility for development of training materials and teacher manuals to train teachers as coaches, as technical officials, and so on. This responsibility was a joint responsibility between both us and basic education. On our part, we have finalized the three manuals, one in support, we were supported by the British Council. And we are also aware that together with UNICEF, DBE has finalized one manual, which is the basis on which they are currently training the teachers. We have also, on our part, finalized the TRASCOP, the coaching framework for coaching teachers in schools. I must also happen to indicate here that we are supposed to be churning out about 70,000 teachers a year in terms of this if we are to meet the target in the next 20 years of the validity of the sports plan as approved by cabinet. But the current output rates, we are currently only churning out about 3,500 teachers, and this we are benchmarking it against a ratio with Australians. The Australians have the best ratio of participant to coach ratio of 1 to 43. For every 43 participant in sport, they have one coach. With us, South Africans, for every one coach, we have 819 participants. So we are way, way off the mark. We do not have coaches as we need them. And we have directed the cup sheeter, which has the sports element in it. The chamber and the cup sheeter is the smallest in terms of the resources it carries. And also the figure of the money there and the prepay and the sports sector is considered too small. And also businesses that operate, who sell sports wares and so on, are not considered to be in the part of the sports sector. They are considered as part of manufacturing. And so they are in the, and some of them are in retail. So they will be in the wholesale and retail sector, and some will be in the manufacturing sector. And so they are not contributing to the sports sector. So our revenues are very, very small in there, but we have directed the computer to use 80% of all its money to focus specifically on training of teachers. This money is still not enough, and even what we and Transcorp are putting in is still not enough to be able to train 17,000 teachers a year to meet the targets that we need to have better ratios. We have benchmarked ourselves to say at least as a developing country, if our ratio can improve to 1 to 50, we think we will be okay. We would be able to implement.
Let's give the teacher to finish and let's start the question, because I'm worried even other members don't know what you are doing in the education. Can we not raise this question?
We will note that, Chair. I think I would respond that essentially we are responsible for doing different areas of training. We are not supposed to train on the same things, so to say. So there are different modules. There would be coach-specific modules, like if you're a coach of football, there will be those specific things which are technical and or tactical nature as a football coach you need to know. And there would be generalized modules that any coach must have. For instance, a module on development in as far as how do you nurture children when a child cries or when it does, what do you do as a coach? Those would be general across all the coaches and which we need to provide as such. And also teachers have to also be trained on the legislative environment. What do you do when you take a child and go with them on a trip? What's your role now as a parent? So that's the point of what we are raising, that we are not supposed to train on similar aspects. So the training is differentiated, and I think all of us have got to do their part in as far as what we need to do. There was also the issue of facilitating capacity building programs for teachers. This also goes to say, for instance, let me give you a practical example about what we are talking about here. In a rural area, it's not always easy to find the facilities, but this country has produced groups like Lucas Kadebe and Dr. Kumalo on the justice of the teachers. And all the part of the teachers never make excuses. They will take a tape measure and measure the field, and they will say to children, on Wednesday, all of you after school, bring shovels from home, and they would come there and they would scrape the field and clear the grass, and they would draw lines, and they would mix line and everything and draw the lines and ensure that children can play. There were no excuses, but a teacher who says, I don't know where to start, if you say I must teach football, what are the proportions of the court, and what's there, and what's that? So we have to capacitate our teachers to be able to become much more innovative and to do more with less, so to say, because the situation of the resources of the country is not about to change that much. We will have a fairly long period, even if we get the MIG grant, and so on an annual basis is $2 billion. It can only help us for 27 years to eradicate the backlog. But what happens with the schools that we reach in the 27th year? What will they be doing in between? So in between now and then, when we reach them, we should have been able to have a plan, and they should have been able to be innovative and do something until we reach those schools. So in essence, we have done a manual now with British Council that helps capacity building for teachers. It's a self-help, an idiot diet type of setup that you read it once, you fully understand exactly what you need to do. And there are also illustrations in the thing on what to do, including the type of warm-up exercises you need to do with children so they don't injure themselves and all the type of things in there. Now, there was also the issue of the us helping National Federation to host National Junior Championships. This we have done, and we have prescribed that all 16 were given them ring-fenced funding for school sport. We are interested that all of them have the junior tournaments, and we are giving them incentives for hosting these junior tournaments. Again, there's the issue of hosting a junior Olympic type of event, which is the third pillar of this. I must indicate that this, in the current framework, it is not possible to have. We simply do not have the resources to do two types of championships. I think when this agreement was signed, truth be told, we are not yet fully costed the sports plan, and now we have, and we know there are no resources, and the Treasury has already informed us that there will be no additional funding for this. So we have to make a choice between a top schools format league and a championship type of event. So we have to make do with both. So we have opted to do the top schools format,
and to deliver it and to make the system bit mature. We will in future perhaps be able to do these two tests. There is a disadvantage of not doing a second type of event. And that disadvantage is that talented children, once again I'll give you an example. In a top school format, schools play as school teams and they knock each other out. They play against nearby schools and knock the other school out. If I play football and I'm a very good striker or I'm a very good middle fielder, but I'm playing with 10 other not so talented children in my school team and we're beaten by that school. And if we're beaten at the local festival, it means that I will not play the district and I will not play the provincial and then I will not even go to the national championship because my school lost. And with me, despite me as an individual being highly talented, I can't progress there because I've been killed by my teammate. So consequently, I fall by the wayside. And that talent, if I was at that lower level and the country doesn't have this many scouts to have seen me at that lower level, and they only see those who come to district and province and national, then the talent has fallen in the cracks. And I think this is the challenge we are dealing with in terms of the ability not to have this, because we need these talent scouts to be able to select like a district team, a team made up of best learners from different schools in that district to come compete as a district team and go on to compete against similar teams from other districts. And that way we can see the cream of the crop. But now we are unable to do so, and we are unable to seek out these highly talented youngsters. So the only way we see them is if they come with the successful schools and they come to the other championships, and only then we see those talented. But it doesn't mean that there were no other talented youngsters we may have lost. And I think that's the challenge of not having this second type of a championship. But we simply don't have the resources for it. We need about 50 million rands a year to do this successfully at all levels and at all tiers. We simply don't have that money. The other was a concept for sport worker schools. We have finalized this. We have converted digital education on it. We have already accredited 18 of the schools. We need 870 of these schools for the system to mature and to operate optimally. But we only have 18 now, and this 18, I must exclude the 50 schools of cricket and the 50 schools of rugby. If we include them, then it looks slightly better, but technically we have decided to leave them because those schools have themselves matured a lot, and the system is working for those two schools. Because on any given day, 90% of the Springboks you see on the field are produced by only 50 schools. So if we can have this type of school for other coach, then we would succeed. And we have already accredited 18 of us. The principals have agreed. The SGPs have passed the necessary resolutions we require them to pass for those schools. There's a waiting list of a whole host of schools we have identified, but which the SGPs still have to pass the resolutions. And for the jealousy of time, I'm not going to detail about what the resolutions we need and what needs to be done, but that work has been done. We also had to develop a five-year competitive schools work plan with national federations. We have done so, and we are resourcing the federations to be able to implement all of this. So this is, in summary, an overview of the implementation of the MOU in as far as this is concerned and the shortcomings and the weaknesses that we face in implementing the key schools of the MOU as such. But one thing I want to come into is on the issue of the system itself. That we are implementing the top schools format, and I'm gonna raise this as a challenge because in how we are running it and the capacity the country has to deliver on this, we are one of the smallest departments by both resources, money as well as capacity. We have the list of the staff members in government. We have about 179 staff members, and that's about it. And the rest of the other departments have, I don't know how much basic education has, but generally, we have the least staff members that we have to deliver the program. And we start at intra-house, which is the responsibility of basic education. So the lower tiers of the system are what basic education must do. Intra-house or intra-house, when children in 9B play against children in 9C, maybe to select the team for a school, that's the responsibility of basic education.
not from a frequency point of view, the inter-house or intra-school competitions or participation is what constitutes mass participation, because this is where we must offer as many children as we can the possibility to participate. Countries like Australia, once again, and the UK and Canada give their children at primary school the opportunity to play by coach. Here in South Africa, we are struggling to give our schools an opportunity to play just one coach. So there are schools that have not played any sport in the last 20 years, and they don't have a ball, they don't have anything. They are facing so many barriers to participation that we have to support them with the provision of equipment, playing attire, all of this, and the resources to be able to do this. We cost up the sports plan and the school sport program specifically, and we arrived at the view that we need 870 million a year for 10 years, just to make sure that we're fully resourced each and every school. Now, to play that is just two codes, not yet. Just for each and every school to play two codes, we need at least 870 million a year for 10 years. And currently our budget as a department is just below 1 billion. So if we were to spend all of it on school sport, then there will be no money for federations, there will be no money for community sport, there will be no money for any other. So we have to do more with little that we have. And so there is also inter-school, where schools in the same vicinity have to play against each other. This now is what we call a league. And that league, like she said, basic education has only started, and it's only rolling out. So there will be plenty of districts of where you do not see this happening, where you don't see the local school tournaments, one school against the other. And even when you ask for fixtures from our provincial departments, both basic education and sports, the fixture says school A against school B, school C against school D. But it's not really a fixture, because it's not really finalized. You have to have the schools and say, Chelsea High School playing against my friend in high school, and they play on this ground at this time, on this day, you know, and the system is unpredictable. So we have a long way to reach there, to scale up. At the last registration of schools to register for this league, we had about 50,000 schools registered, and in truth, though, it's only about 11,000 that are participating. So there are many schools who raise their hands and say, we want in, but they simply are facing so many barriers for them to participate that they are unable to really participate. And so that's the challenge. Then there is the local festivals, which is circuit-based tournaments, which must happen twice a year in each and every circuit, in each and every of the 16 courts. This too, we are struggling. We got two districts this year, two provinces to implement their local festivals. Limpopo and Mpumalanga were the only two that this year managed to implement the local festivals. And we have to scale up this to all the circuits of the Department of Education to participate in all of this. Then on the higher tiers of the system is the district tournaments, provincial as well as national championships. That's what we, Sport and Recreation South Africa, are responsible for and we have to implement. I must indicate that in 2012, when we started the system chair, many of our provinces, that is provinces, the Department of Sports, cheated their way up. They took shortcuts and they knew that we didn't have the capacity to look and watch. So they took shortcuts. They brought children, some of them from schools that didn't participate in a district tournament, and they brought them to the provincial tournament. And some schools were also smuggled to go play the national tournament because they thought that that would help them succeed. So by 2013, we thought that provinces must implement the provincial championships, and they must give us their timetables for their provincial championships, which they did. We dispersed all our managers, including those not working in schools, for to go observe and certify for themselves that indeed the provincial championships were taking place. And we were more than happy, and that is why provinces like KwaZulu-Natal, Gauteng, and Northwest, who when they attempted to field schools at the national championships, we knew that they were eliminated at the provincial championships. We were quick to disqualify those schools because we now were certain about the system. This year, we have increased that monitoring and focus to districts. We're insisting that all of them submit their district schedules. They have done so. As we are speaking,
some expressive competitions are still taking place across various coasts. We do not have enough managers or enough staff and capacity to go monitor that all districts are happening. But we have decided to do it on a random basis and unannounced, so that provinces never know when we're coming to see. And so they better be having it on the day they say they're having. Otherwise, those that do not implement, we have already docked them the money. We froze the transfers of the Eastern Cape because we went and checked and found that the tournament wasn't happening and they had not indicated to us that it isn't happening. We immediately froze the money. As soon as they hosted the tournament, we transferred to them again. So we're using this leverage to force them to do the right thing and ensure that at all levels and at all tiers, this system works. There are, however, weaknesses with this system. One of the major weaknesses is that it is just too long. From start to finish, it's too long. It starts way in January and it only ends up in December. So it's a year long. So a child who began playing this code and competing in March and goes on, he has to go all the way and there are 2 months breaks in between. So often he has to wait 3 months for the next tournament to go compete. And that doesn't augur well for the attitude and the camaraderie in the teams and so on. And it's just too taxing for them, particularly the poorer schools, to have this long thing. Secondly, the issue of its roles. In year 1, 2012, we started only with 9 codes and we had about 5,280 participants in it. By 2013, with 13 codes, it had grown exponentially to 9,840 participants. And now, 2014, our preparations and what we imagine now from the provinces and the teams that are coming up, by looking now at almost 15,000 participants. So there are very, very few cities in South Africa that can host a tournament of this magnitude. Just in perspective, the London Olympics was only 3,830 athletes. And this now is like 5 times the London Olympics. And we simply just don't have the logistical capacity to host this. And the tournament in its current delivery format is becoming more and more expensive. It is actually the second biggest thing government is doing, only second to the HIV rollout program. So by these ambitious targets, at peak by 2017, with all 16 codes and all 9 indigenous games codes, we're looking at championship of 25,000 positive. So it's simply not affordable, it's simply not practical. We have decided that perhaps we need to explore a 2-tier championship, winter championship, and summer championship, and to divide the codes into half-half. But now the bigger challenge is that if we do not in the next 5 years ramp up the capacity of basic education and sport of recreation to deliver the 2-tier championship, it isn't going to be practical. Currently, the few people we have, both in the 2 departments, who has to deliver a 5-month championship, will now be forced to deliver a championship in 6 months. And they'll also be forced to immediately start another one, deliver it to December, second championship. So from capacity point of view, it's simply impractical to do a 2-tier championship now. So we'll brave the storm for 3 more years on this route we are on with this big championship and hope that in the intervening 3 years, our work with yourselves as representatives of the people assist us in convincing the Treasury of the importance to invest in this program and to make sure that we can ramp up our capacity to do a 2-tier championship in this regard. I'm now going to pass a whole host of slides and come to the spot for to the priority codes. We have 16+1, we call them 16+1, and I think those who are members of the ruling party will understand quickly. The plus one is the exam code, you know, so we have added it there because you have the indigenous games codes. But in that one, there are 9, actually. It's not just 1 code. It's 9 codes. Khadi, Ntuba, Dibeke, Kocho, Ntonga, Dketo, Kristokis, Muravara, and Yakske. So all these codes, we're introducing them into schools. 4 of them are already being played in schools now on a formal basis, and there is competition at the championship for them. We also have basketball, boxing, chess, volleyball, softball, tennis, goalball, gymnastics, hockey, table tennis, and swimming as 11 codes that are prioritized. But the pinnacle of this system is the super codes, the so-called the Big 5. Football, athletics, cricket, netball, and rugby. And these are the codes we are saying we need to
we agree in basic education that we need to gazette that these codes are compulsory in schools. All the five must be played by all schools, and schools will have a choice to choose some of the codes from the other 11. And the indigenous youth codes are also compulsory in all schools. Both for purposes of what was said here, physical education training, but also for competitive sport purposes. And we are in the process of formalizing this code. We have written all the rules around them, standardized the games, and we work with CSR to standardize the equipment as well for this. And we also run a festival of indigenous games on an annual basis. I'm now going to pass and move to the talent identification program, which will be my last area of focus. In the talent identification program, as you know, we are targeting children in grade 7 who are going to grade 8 the next year. So this is important, and the importance is that this national championship and provincial and district is a championship of both primary as well as high schools. So you have children as young as 9 there, and you have children as old as 18. So, and the needs of a 9-year-old and that of an 18-year-old are totally different. So we have to use a differentiated approach within the same championship to save costs. And we also need chaperones and so on. So the technical officials for this championship and the support champ, they are just too many, and the volunteers involved are just too many. So the championship is a very expensive exercise. It's not cheap, I must say. And within that, we are targeting those grade 7s, those identified by the scouts. And our scouting system is very different. It's not like where Jomosono goes to Magurung and stands on the side and look at Magurung FC and he thinks that he likes the middle field and says, come here, are you willing to come do trials with me next week? And then the player says yes, and off the player goes to participate. Our system is much more vigorous. We are saying that there has to be three talent scouts watching the same match, and all three must actually score the player 75 and above. So if one of them scores you like 50 something, you are not in. So we are quite stringent in as far as our selection criterion is concerned. So, and those children selected by the three scouts, we do two things with them. First, we place them on the so-called ministerial sports budget, which is a maximum of 100,000 rands a year, which takes this talented children. We then move them to the sport focus schools, the schools that are accredited to be good. If you are a good tennis player and we select you, the three scouts select you in tennis, we take you to a good tennis school, like the one we are at Rivonia High School in Johannesburg. We take you there. And we station you there, we pay for all your fees, all your things. Let's face it, the country doesn't have the capacity nor the resources to build all the pictures to improve in all our schools. It's not possible, even if we want to. So the best thing to do is to become focused, is to have these schools that we select and say, this will be an accredited school for swimming. And there we can build 10 Olympic sites to improve in that school. But we can also do certain things with basic education. We can send there if the minimal ratio of children to teachers is 1 to 40, as is the standard norm. We then can say that school, if there are so many children and they deserve 13 teachers, let's rather not put 13 by 40. And the extra teacher must be a proficient teacher who has a coaching license of SASCOC at level 3 in tennis and works and spends most of the time with this talented youngsters and to this specific school. So we are not therefore asking that every school has a highly talented coach in a specific course, but we are saying only in this focused schools. And if we are going about it and we agree that we need 890 of these schools, then in essence we are only talking 890 more teachers in the system. So, which becomes a bit attractive, a bit affordable, and very practical within the capacity we have. And then the sport focus schools will be the schools that really produces the champions for our country. And then the second thing we do with the children is that we take them for scientific testing. We measure their eye-hand coordination, their response rates, whether it's in cricket, around batting, whether it's how powerful their swing is, how fast it is, how they respond, how strong is the backhand. And we can also make training for each and every one of these individual children. And we are using them now, the National Training Center and the Research Sports Science Institute, and we are paying them to test all the children. The tests for the children in the system have just finished this week, and
The good thing about this is that it shows that our system is working, because of all of this, it's only one whom we realize that the spot is in his position, but his health will never allow him to reach peak, because we also do ECG tests on you, we look how strong your lungs are, how well you inhale oxygen and so on. And we put you on the ramp to see how well you're going to run. So if you are a cross-country runner, but your peak and declines, and peak and declines are within 5 seconds instead of 10, you're never going to, it's not, doesn't matter what we do with you. You may have latent talent, but your body is not built up for it. So then in that, we have to cancel the learner and either refocus on other coach that she or he may be good in, or rather encourage them to play another thing, you know. So, but that's what it helps, because we don't want to invest so much money in a learner, $500,000. By the time they leave university, they really can't give us the medals. So that's the picture. But you can see that the system works, because if all the learners we have already selected, all of them pass except one, this test, it shows that our system of the scouts is really working and maturing. So from this point of view, we are quite happy with this, and we will work on the second tier of the schools called the regional super schools. This will be the mini academies that support the other local schools, also share facilities with other schools, and also host district tournaments. And so those schools, we are dangling a carrot of 250,000 per school. We think there must be 53 of them, because of the 53 geopolitical boundaries of our country in district and metro terms. And we will give each and every one of them 250,000 a year to maintain their facilities, to do outreach, to get their teachers to go out into communities, help rural schools surrounding them, grow up lines and do all of this, and help them to start sports and so on. So these are outreach type schools. We call them the regional support schools. We have not designated any of them. We are only hoping that only from 2017 we will be having sufficient results to start giving them the money. But now we do not have. And the rest of the other schools, we call them generalist schools. They have a chance to play any of the codes of the system. But we think that from 2017 they would now have to play the compulsory 5 codes going forward. And so that, Chair, really brings us to the end of our presentation in as far as school board is concerned.
Thank you, DG. I'm suspecting that these two new committees in a new parliament, now they know what is going on. There's no other way that we'll be thinking that department is supposed to do a vision, not hearing from the two departments. And I'm suspecting that you are taking this opportunity to have the presentation of MOU. I can say that we have taken so long since 2011. I'm not even happy about where we are with the implementation. I'm suspecting as these two committees, we need to give you time range. We have taken too long. But honorable members, let's ask questions, let's contribute, let's propose, and I'm suspecting that will help us. Honorable Bergman, Honorable Mute, in fact, Honorable Manan, Honorable also, to Honorable Abraham, Honorable Malaki, Honorable Alhom, Honorable Maliga, Honorable Muri. My Honorable, I forgot the name, okay. We are all new, Dadumbozan, in this committee. All new, both education and sport. I don't know any veterans of education. We are all new.
No, just before we left Parliament, we listened to the similar presentation.
We are here to make it happen. the sports and recreational church, 20 years down the line, we can't say that we are happy about the transformation. That's why we are here today. So if these two companies, they always do what we are doing today, to come closer, to work together, give us these 5 years with major passion. You see, Mosh, you strike a rock, strike a woman. Give us these 5 years. Thank you. The number one, somebody.
I'll be number one for the first time. Chair, one or more comments in terms of and something you've just touched on now. I think a lot of the times when we talk about transformation and we say that there's going to be quotas or transformation, and we say that it's not moving at a fast enough pace. The DG has, our DG has said it pretty bluntly, you know, that we work with what we've got. But I'm beginning to think that the more we hear this, the more we need to go back to basics. It comes down to school level, that it's a service delivery issue that the transformation has not taken place. And the first port of call would be at schools. Now, I think this is the first time I ever saw the presentation, and I see that we have tried to include parents. We have tried to increase and include parents when it comes to on the drug side of things. We need to look at siblings, parents, coaches, teachers, community, and then, of course, you know, on the professional levels, they've got management. On the school level, we've got to look at school governing bodies and school and the actual teachers. The programs have to be broad enough to include everyone, to be inclusive, because often what you find is, let's say with drugs and sports, you target one person, you teach the parents what to look for in that child. Meanwhile, the parents might be doing drugs, the siblings might be doing drugs, and what you're doing is we're kind of just fixing one part of, we're putting a plaster on one sore. Meanwhile, there's a whole body of sores that we need to fix. But more importantly than that, another, it's almost like an elephant in the room that we don't discuss, and that's nutrition. A lot of poor schools, they only have one meal a day. So physical education kind of puts further strain on a child that hasn't eaten, and is often an excuse as to why they don't participate in intramural activities. They say that they only have, you know, they've had an apple or they've got water, and it's going to last them till the meal at night or whatever the case may be. Somewhere along the line, we need to just like we monitor for drugs, we need to now monitor for nutrition, and maybe somewhere in the works is budget for that. Lastly, there's a lot of overlapping, and there's a lot of reliance on each other, and sometimes sports and recreation seems they can't move unless education has moved, and I'm sure it's going to be vice versa. But I'd like to propose that we look at it in a silo first, and then we keep on checking and balancing what happens by making education responsible for the physical education, for the actual pupils, and for getting people to participate, and then make sports and recreation responsible for skilling the coaches, ensuring that they're coaches, making sure that coaches are in every school and that there's identifiable people running the coaches program more than the actual programs themselves in the schools, and leaving those programs up to the education part. But then also being responsible for the talent scouting and for taking talented individuals and then putting them on the sports program. So it's always clear separation of duty, which makes our jobs probably more easier and is probably more productive in terms of delivery.
Thanks for two suggestions. Let us first appreciate the fact that at last basic education and sports and recreation committees have come together, because when you talk on the other side, the other one is not here, so today is better. We'll tell each other what they need to do. Okay. I think we all agree that human body needs sports to be healthy. And
We didn't know what to do before, but I think it is about time now that we take this post to the schools, most especially at the lower level. The reason I'm saying this is because I believe each and every child deserves to be healthy. Doesn't matter if urban or rural. So, but for the past 8 years, we have seen sports happening more in the urban areas, meaning more healthier urban kids than the rural kids. Discrimination. And that's why we push in that let the sports happen everywhere in this way. We, out of these 53 schools, special schools we are talking about, we still want to know this. How many are from rural and how many are from urban? Because if majority is from urban areas, it means you are not transforming. You are not transforming. It means the things will still stay in. The rural kid will still be unhealthier and the urban kid will still be healthier. So, we need to balance it from there. 53 schools shouldn't be eliminated by the urban schools if we are really serious with transformation. And there shouldn't be any money excuse or whatever that blocks this government from transforming the torture. Or from free the real cues from the torture that they've suffered the past 20 years or even before it. So, if we say we want to see changes, let changes be everywhere. Not putting more resources where they were, resources more and more and more and more. We need to study to where it has never been as well. And at the same time, not leaving the urban areas. I'm not saying we must neglect the urban areas. I'm saying let the rural kids also feel that he's really in the new South Africa. Because the dangerous torture has been enough. So the $250 that are going to be allocated to the 53 schools should also go to the rural areas by spreading the 53 schools to rural urban. So we're still waiting for that breakdown of how many out of these 53 are from rural, how many are from urban. Then we know your plan is quite addressing what the Committee of Sports and Education has been talking about.
Thank you. We don't have enough time. We must not repeat ourselves, but we must make our bones. The next honorable member.
Thanks, Chairperson. Mine is going to be just a comment and very short questions. Since we are here for these two different things, which is the curriculum-based subject focused on developing and the extracurricular activity focused on implementing. Chairperson, since we know that we have these challenges, but it's not going to be challenges since we are with education as our partner, our department sisters today. I think everything is going to be fine since we have met it. You are here to do the correction in the past maybe 20 years that we had. We know exactly that there are people who cannot fault any teacher who doesn't have any passion in school. We know that some of them got passionate in sports. May exactly that those people they can even spend their time without getting any overtime working just for sports. And I think maybe the education can just give themselves time on the school sports assistant by taking some of the circuits and put one school sports assistant, so we know exactly that they are getting the stipend. Maybe to assist in the circuit each and every second so that they can just submit the report. Okay, my question is going to be short. How much budget for the mobilization in education has gone towards school sports?
And how has the department ensured that the MOU was signed in 2011 and it was implemented? And what has the department done to request more funds for schools for 20?
Honorable, I'm sure you know that
thank you, Madam Chair.
I have some questions with regard to the input on doping. I would like to bring to the table that not only should we get parents, teachers, etc. involved, we do have courses where children go for extra training in gyms, and many of these coaches have been seen to provide, or trainers, to provide children with steroids. So I think we must look at gyms as well. And then, if I can just go to... If we look at the guiding principles, are teachers really conversant in identifying drug users? I think we should go into partnership with places like medical centers, where we can get doctors and nurses and psychologists and all those people on board to assist with the identification, because it's quite a process to follow. And then what about learners that have religious convictions? What are we going to do with them during these training periods? They'll have to be allocated something else. And then we have schools that do not have sporting facilities like sport grounds. Are we going to be able to twin with other schools, and what are we going to do with regard to the transport of these learners to these schools? And then I would just like to ask a question with regard to the six codes of the 16 that already have talented scouts. Which codes are they? And then you speak of a turnout of 17,000 teachers to be reached, and you currently only have 18% of a budget available. What is the monetary terms needed to be able to reach your target? And I just want to see... Okay, thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chairperson, and thanks to the department for the presentation. I just want to comment and say thank you. I'm happy that the education bill will be amended. Hopefully we will have a drug-free zone schools. And then also, will all children be screened, and how will that be done? The physical education, I've asked this before, where we have professional retired people, that's cultures, we have professional retired poor players. Why can't we utilize these people? We're reinventing teachers that are not interested in teaching, coaching, doing that, and wanting to teach them, and then that won't be successful. We're utilizing people that's out there, they want to do it, they have a passion, and so on. Then, one of the things, the coaches ratio is not feasible. It's too many children for boards. There's a coach that are there. Again, if we have specialized people, we could actually reduce that, and we would have better coaching and better results. I do support the inter-school. It's very important. I remember when I was a child that you actually have that competition in the school within your own school, and then you actually exceed and excel to the next level because you want to be based on what you can. Then if I understood the DG correctly, that kids will be identified in various schools in the rural areas and taken to the specialized schools, that, the 50 specialized schools. Then a good teacher is not necessarily a good coach. So we must look at that, and not just take teachers. We've got teachers that they're not interested in coaching and they want to do. And I feel that we utilize the former professionals that want to work. Thank you.
Well,
thank you.
Mr. Chair, I just want to find out from the Department of Basic Education whether they've had some interactions with SGBs with regard to the issue of doping, and to establish whether in those interactions there's actually appetite for random doping. And secondly, to the Department of Sports and Recreation, they made some announcements about the numbers of training, alluding to 17,000 teachers being trained a year in partnership with SASCOC and CalCITA. But they did also recall that it was also SASCOC's lack of cooperation that resulted in 4,000 teachers not being reached to be provided with that training, as I get to in the annual report, and how going forward this obstacle is going to be overcome to actually reach the target. And lastly, whether anything has gone, whether there's been any thinking to take into consideration the challenge of learner transport wherein learners who study from, you know, far apart from their homes, when they won't practically have that time to take a physical education if it is outside the timetable of their travels, because the first thing they want to do is to get home because the transport is at that time. Thank you.
Thank you to join us. We are just firing the first questions in those questions that you will be raising was speaking. We did forward your apology, myself and the professor. Thank you, thank you so much.
Lord Chair, we welcome the two presentations. And it is clear from the two presentations that largely now also dealing with the large chunk of apartheid leaders, which I mean that at least we are making some strides in addressing that. I mean, there are gaps between the two departments. From where I'm sitting, I mean, it is clear that we need to focus on very few things that we must do very well. And those things are the following. We need to ensure that we can zoom in on physical education, ensure that we do whatever is possible to train as many teachers as possible, given the constraints that we have, to get the capacity that can do that. And I know that at the moment you are providing it as part of life orientation. I think that's why it was showing that possibly maybe should be standalone. The second thing that I think we need to focus on is to ensure that we support the two departments in perfecting the school's Champions League competition that is currently running. But ensure that we can encourage inter-school and intra-school participation, so that when it reaches the district level, at least it's real participation from everyone. And then the third area that I think we need to focus on is around league, because, you know, the apartheid leaders has left us, particularly the public schools and rural, poor, without sporting facilities. And to a certain extent, even ourselves, somehow we still continue building schools without the necessary facilities. So at the moment, I mean, our only avenue is league. So we might have to zoom in on league, ensure that it does what it's supposed to provide for. It's either we must say the 15% must be reallocated to the department, so that the department can ensure that there is sports facilities implemented throughout. And then the other area would then ensure that we make it possible for children to can be tested for drugs. Therefore, if it means the school sport act must be amended, we need to begin working towards that. But because it's children, I should think we might have to bring factors that the Department of Education was emphasizing around being sensitive, because I don't think we must end up not making that distinction. But I think we need to work on the act. Thank you.
Thank you, Cortez. My observation, Chairperson, is that the two departments are still talking two different languages in terms of focus.
starting with the basic education. It's concentrating more on the physical education, which is good because it gives the background of each a sporting code. But we need to agree that happens inside the 7 hours of teaching. And each class, each grade will go out to do it the way it is planned according to the timetable of that particular school. Now, coming to the sporting recreation. Sporting recreation is talking in terms of mass participation and the issue of the league. I'm saying these are two different languages because now, until when the sports mass participation in schools is part of the timetable, is part of the curriculum, we are not going to get to where we want to go, because schools are not compelled to participate in school sports, because after 7 hours they leave. And the sport and education has got a program of mass participation, and also we have been told that the sport and education department will put money aside for mass participation, for the leagues. But they will only begin to support schools at a district level. Now, it's worrying, as I said earlier on, that it's not compulsory for schools to participate because we are told the Department of Education does not set the budget aside to ensure that all schools participate. It becomes very expensive for rural schools to participate in these leagues if there is no budget, because rural schools are far from each other. So you will find that only those maybe close to towns would participate in these activities up until when the Department of Sport and Recreation takes over from districts upwards. I think we need to be trying to look as to how are we going to ensure the two departments that sport is not an option. It's part of teaching and learning. We were just told last week by the Germans that in Germany, from grade 1 up to grade 12, every day, 2 hours in their timetable is set aside for sports. So we need to begin to look towards moving in that direction. I think if we can achieve that, we will see the mass participation being the mass participation for all the schools and learners in our country.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm going to be quick. I just want to check with the two presenters as to whether the memorandum of understanding is waiting for both departments, whether it is most complied with or adhere to, and I mean just request the person that I honestly be answered. My second question to the person is, the Department of Education indicated that they do not have enough educators that to be trained that are qualified that can train physical education in schools. I want to check the person whose responsibility is that one. Is it for sport or is it for education, or is it no one's responsibility? Maybe after 4 or 5 years, we are still hearing the same thing that no, we don't have enough qualified educators. I just want to check the other thing, Chair Person, that look, we keep on saying teachers don't do this, don't do that. And we know for a fact, Chair Person, that educators are paid teachers. It's a fact, and I'm sorry to say it. But they can get enough. Of course, yes, there must be patience. That, and we know for a fact, Chair Person, that money is a motivator. Wherever you put money, people would come in. I'm saying, are we saying teachers should just do this even during at their extra time or the time that they're supposed to be doing something, and they don't get remunerated for that. It is just a question and an innocent question to a person. My other question to education is that I want to agree that yes, we at times have to improvise. Like an example that was made that you kick a rugby ball and train with it. But I want to check, apart from the rugby ball that we might have in a school, what other equipment does education have or provide in the schools? And lastly, on education, sir, are we again saying that because we do not have something that is called a school sports day, are we saying that educators who must come to school, you know, presentable like myself, you know, on a tie and a suit, and when they get to school, they must go to the ground and do the physical education with this type of attire. That, you know, that's just another question and very innocent question. My question to the Department of Sports, the DG says that the Big Five codes must be compulsory in schools. I just want to check, given the curriculum of the school, whether this is practically possible, the implementation part of it, whether it is possible. I just want to check. And lastly, Chairperson, the DG also indicated that they have something that they call the focus school, that in a focus school, if, for instance, educators are 9, they would add just one educator. I want to check here, because as far as I know, remuneration or salaries of educators is from the Department of Basic Education. Now, whose responsibility is going to be on this one? And thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Honourable Fanda Walsh.
Chair, thanks for the opportunity. I would like to start off by saying I think the ideal would be if we have longer school days and every child from a rural area could be in a hostel so that they could be at the sport facilities and get food, etc., etc. But that's in an ideal world, and I think the unions and everybody else will be jumping on me now. But I think, first of all, we would have to have an audit of all schools who have facilities like a gym, sports fields, whether they have equipment, whether they even qualified teacher, and I add a first aid room or kit for in case we have small accidents. I would like to say that it is good to amend any act if it can benefit society. But before we do that, we actually did amend the laws to search learners for drug abuse. I think it was in 2005, 6, 7, around about there, I can't remember, in my previous term. In the early 2000s. So if we don't implement what we have, are we going to implement a new amendment to make sure that we are having drug-free schools? Well, and I would actually like to know how many schools are really implementing that piece of legislation. Coming back to sports, I think true transformation will come when we have the facilities. Now, it is true that over 24,000 public schools in our country will not have these facilities overnight, and that we therefore must look at, yes, we have a memorandum of understandings, what is the role of local government, for example. On strength, somebody mentioned, a colleague mentioned the fact that we don't all have Olympic-sized pools. But almost all of the old towns had clubhouses of tennis courts and pools and bowl fields, whatever it would have been. Now, swimming is a very good sport, but it also teaches especially rural learners to be water safe. We have lots of children drown in rivers, etc., etc. Are we having a relationship with local government or those specific clubs where we have pools to utilize or have they not yet gone there? Then I love mentioning examples because on oversight that's where you get it. I will refer to the Barker B Primary School in the Greater Letaba, Mujadish Cliff area, where the playground
utilized by the learners of that school was taken away, and two stadiums were built, it's got perfect, I would call it status of the art, it seems like a new term in education, tennis courts, netball courts, but the heat is this high now. So why aren't the learners of that school and the high school across the road not being able to utilize that facility? I think we must also get an audit on those type of facilities in our communities here, which is not utilized. It should be utilized. And I'm a very glad colleague, Honorable Basson mentioned, I'm a great supporter of twin schools or getting schools to adopt other schools in using their facilities. Of course, there are challenges with transport, etc. But I think we must go wider than just the ordinary thing. Thank you, Jim.
Last hand, it's Honorable Ngun. You know, I want to go back to the second round. Honorable Mgunu, the last one, I've got Utiadum Pontan and my sister Majek. Let's take them in order that we must not have a second round at least. You are the last.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and morning, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members. You know, we sometimes we look at the budget and look at the facilities and we say there are the reasons of non-sports. Underlooking frustration of the same teachers down there. You know, when you are frustrated, you end up running away from the situation. Now that we've got two kinds of schools, the fee-paying school and the non-fee-paying school. The teacher has done all the inter-classes, inter-clubs at the school level. Now the teacher has to go with the same class to play with the other schools. And that school is the non-fee school. The principal says there's no money for traveling. The money is supposed to be spent for the curriculum. What does the teacher do? The kids are saying to the teacher, we want to go and play. We have 1 year. We want to go and play. Do we put a budget into the non-fee school? Because the moment the principal says kids start paying, eruption will come up there. I'm understanding that municipalities are giving a lot of money. 15% of sports. Our municipalities use that amount for the benefit of the sports, the community, and the school. If the answer is no, which I think to all 100% in attendance here is no, what do we do about it? The proposal will be, let's take to the department that works for sports, so that we can make that department accountable. What do you do about that particular amount? There are so many sporting fields that are there in the municipalities. Sometimes they even grow these grass tall. No one is using them. And when a school goes to ask for a sporting facility from the municipality just to pay that particular day, they make the school to pay. What are we saying about those things? If a school, a north school, the municipality wants money from that particular school to pay. What do we do about those things? And lastly,
the other point.
Okay, let me stop there.
We have emphasized the question of UMIG and the sports playgrounds. I'm saying that I was intimidatingly not emphasized more with head. But if you still have any other points, say it. Don't stop.
I'm already intimidated after that.
I'm sorry, my honorable member. Honorable Bontani. Don't coward me, leader. Honorable
Thank you, Chairperson. Well,
not easily intimidated, and cherish it. Thank you very much. Just have to say the way that you say their own about Velayo in the sense of a very different meaning. I just stop there.
Thank you, Tim.
So
it has a different different meaning. Which cause I'm a vuhamva,
just two things. The department has made a very important addition that not all schools have got the necessary infrastructure. You know, as members, we will be certified that there will be progress or there's progress toward that direction, provide infrastructure, once we know what budgetary activities are there. So, for both departments, one would like to see the real budget, only the budget, project needed here. If not for us, next time around, we could be provided with the necessary budget as well. Two, reality outside there tells me that there are sporting activities which are run by teacher unions. There's been some healthy competition outside there when the two most your teacher unions run the sporting activities. My question is, what kind of support does the department, especially to call us a sports and recreation department, give to teacher unions in further the sporting activities, especially to link this to what Honorable Adira has mentioned about mass participation. You know, you move around, you know, over weekends in Durban, amongst model schools, you see parents on weekends with their students, call them kids or students, whatever, playing and doing all this. We don't happen in our own, if I say, own communities, I mean, black or African communities. That doesn't happen. When are we going to start encouraging them? I know some did mention school government bodies. Let me try. Yeah, you aren't meditating me. Look at me. Thank you very much.
You can't be intimidated. Honorable Bosom. Honorable Major, thank you, Honorable Bosom. Thank you, Chairperson. Mine is very short. Thank you for the presentation. For the Department of Basic Education, Ms. Kulu was deliberating about drug-free zone schools. I just want to check what measures do the Department of Education take to make sure that schools will be drug-free? Because I have a problem in schools which are very, very close to cities, if I may call, which are accessible. You find that there's still a lot of drugs that are being circulated within the school. And you find that the ladies who sell food or sweets or something like that within the premises of the schoolyards are the very ones who put these drugs within the food that they sell to the children. What measures can the Department of Education take to make sure that is not happening? Okay, much as I know maybe outside premises it can also happen. I'm also wondering if something can be done in terms of, I don't know what to call it, but for people who steal sheep and cattle, there's something which is called pasha-pasha by the police. They just pass into an area, into all schools, and then they just check children, check everybody. If maybe that can be done frequently, the drug selling within the school, or Dacha, whatever, maybe can be reduced, because they would not know when the police are coming to just do a random check. The last one is
those children which are found to be having drugs in their system, you say there are no punitive measures taken. What is it that maybe is done to make sure that their children don't do it? Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Members. You know, this committee has been invited in the workshop of the code of e-doping trade. They are here. If maybe they want to share something with both committees, I'll give them, they didn't introduce them, and my chairperson mentioned that, that there are people that they didn't introduce them. I've seen Mr. Galat, who is responsible for trade here in you tell him, because they were having a broad workshop where the international people were there talking about the doping. So maybe they can assist us as both committees to contribute. Thank you, Honorable Deputy Minister. And then the our officials that you have presented, anyone can take what you see or he wants to say in response. But you must show that as these two committees will be putting time frames, we'll be calling you again. We can't have the signing of MOU in 2011. We are still trying to get each other. It's not accepted. But because we are all new committees, we'll assist you that it must be on the ground now. Was it said, so you think that we're still trying to check what is this animal that we're trying. But now we're heard. We support you in whatever way. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, honorable members, and thank you for conveying my apology. And quite interestingly, the item, I had to excuse myself from the Cabinet Committee, but one of the items that was under discussion was the importance of an act of citizenry, that indeed we are committed to people-centered government, but at the same time, citizens should not be passive recipients of services, rather be active recipients, engaging, as Mr. Pongana says, in terms of contributing meaningfully to the development of our learners, so that it really triad of learners, educators, and your parents that make it possible. Chairperson, I'm going to do this to a broad overview in terms of the points that were provided to me from the questions that have been put on, you know, such a very rough sketch I have of the questions, and I apologize that I wasn't present at all the time, but let me perhaps start with the questions that or the issues that were raised once I was here and try to deal with those issues. I think amongst the issues that have been identified were the issues of sport enhancing drugs. What do we do about it? What is the legal mechanism that we have put in place? Now, already in 2001, we basically provided for amendments to the legislation which allowed us to search and seize drugs. We also have a collaboration agreement with the police where we can indeed honorable member, do random searches, and these are being taken out from time to time. As I was entering the building here, I met a national commissioner, and she says, you know, we could meet again to refine this collaboration agreement where more than 10,000 schools are adopted by the South African Police Service, and we have to sharpen the instrument in order to basically make a bigger impact. The issue with regard to the drug, sport enhancement drug, is the testing. Where does the testing take place? In terms of the legislation as it stands right now, testing for drugs and searches occur within the school premises. Now, if sporting activity takes place outside the school premises, it would mean that we would have to basically broaden the scope of the legislation to do that particular exercise. So we would need the list of drugs that would be that we would test on, as well as the authority through legislation to be able to carry out this particular test. Under appropriate circumstances. We've engaged with the Director General as well as the Ministry of Sport and Recreation to say that we have to work together to ensure that we are able to do this as swiftly as possible, and I certainly want to convey the assurance here that we are certainly with you in terms of the anti-doping element. Now, on that particular note, there is a correlation between alcohol and drug abuse and sport and recreation. and really we have to protect in our schools to ensure that we don't allow our children to basically be affected to these vices of alcohol and drug abuse. And if you look at the statistics in terms of alcohol consumption, drug abuse in our schools, it's quite astounding and it's a matter of great concern. We are in the Western Cape, for example, and the Western Cape has a huge problem with regard to drugs. But it's not only in the Western Cape, it's other provinces as well. And we have to collectively do much about that. And therefore, we've also ensured that we raise the issues very, very strongly with the governing body associations to say that they too would have to play a role, a dedicated role in terms of safety and security of our learners, which includes the monitoring of drug abuse. Now, that is my response at this point in time. So what I'm saying to you is that there is absolutely no difficulty looking at an amendment of the legislation. Indeed, we've already completed a draft proposal for which we want to submit to Parliament soon. But we'll have to go to Cabinet first. But I would very much like to include this element into the draft proposal so that when it's tabled in Parliament, it also deals with this particular element. The issue of budget is a challenging one. And I empathize with the Department of Sport and Recreation because in the context of the many calls that they have to promote and the lack of infrastructure that exists not only in schools but in communities, the amount that allocated to them, in my respectful opinion, is very, very limited. And if I empathize with them, then I could only say to you that with regards to education, we certainly had much, much less. And the allocation that we received is not only for sport and recreation, but also includes arts and culture. So you have a small allocation that you distribute among 24,000 schools, and you could address a range of issues here. What we are arguing about is two things. And in fact, this conversation is quite active at the political level. One is that should the municipal infrastructure be allocated to the municipalities or should it indeed be allocated to the Department of Sport and Recreation? We are arguing to say that there is certain merit and strong merit in allocating to the Department of Sport and Recreation. And in that context, when infrastructure provision occurs, it occurs in relation to, through a conversation that takes place with education. So you might have a cluster of schools where you do not have sufficient space or opportunity to create sporting facilities in each school, but you could have an appropriate location where the schools as well as the community can benefit from that particular initiative. And certainly the Department of Sport and Recreation is not averse to it, and municipalities are. So what we'll have to do is to firm that up. But I think the issue really is also the reality of why you talked about this memorandum of understanding and saying, what is it? Why doesn't it work? Now, I think honourable members are aware of the fact that provinces have MECs for education and they have MECs for sport recreation, or sport recreation, arts and culture. Do the two meet often enough to plan together in terms of what they have to do? So whatever we might say, whatever our voices are here, and they may be very, very strange sounding voices, when it comes to actual implementation, is that synergy existing there? And we have already proposed, and both the ministers have agreed, that we should have a joint ministerial MEC meeting involving all MECs for education as well as MECs for sport and recreation, and develop and adopt an action plan that could drive us to another level. I also hear from the questions that have been raised and comments that have been made, that the concern about the difference between physical education on the one hand and sporting codes, whether it's football, rugby, netball, or any of the other codes. Now, colleagues would remember, and my colleague on my left, and Quintana would remember, at one stage, life orientation was no reference to PE. Do you remember that? And we argued that, you know, unless you specifically identify PE as an activity within the curriculum and you allocate time to it, it would not become a reality. At least you can say we've dealt with that. But the challenge, and we certainly want to confess, that the challenge is basically in developing that the professional development of all our educators, of a sufficient number of educators occurs, which would enable them to do the PE part on a practical level. I think the theoretical part is quite easy in terms of life orientation, but it's a practical level, and certainly development has to take place in it. Now, this is a good sign of collaboration in the sense that sport and recreation says we will support you in terms of development. The part of basic education says we too
we try to utilize whatever opportunity. So through UNESCO, we've got various agencies that are helping us with development. And indeed, we are also engaging with the universities to ensure that in terms of the Kunzan Lushaka and everything else, they should basically ensure that there is an allocation or certainly opportunities for training in that area. Because PE, unlike your sporting course, is less complicated. If you teach cricket or even swimming for that matter or rugby, you require specialized skills. So it's not a question of going to university and being able to acquire those skills. It's special scope coaching skills and training that you require. PE is less complicated. And certainly could be more generic in form. So that takes us then to the other part. And the other part that the colleagues have been raising is a question that is being raised. And I leave it as an open question because certainly we're going to be guided by what the Joint Committee suggests to us as executive. Should sports be compulsory? And if so, what are the sporting codes? And if indeed they are compulsory, do we have sufficient infrastructure and resources to be able to make it a reality? Are we just going to say theoretically like it's compulsory when in terms of organization, infrastructure, amenities, coaching, human resource capacity, we don't have the ability? I would want to argue for a transition. To say, let us basically prepare the ground. Let us prepare the ground where we have it, as suggested. And you could maybe refine it slightly, but the Spark Federation is talking about 5 codes. I have no difficulty with the Big 5. To say you might want to add or subtract or add to it. But at least every girl learner and every boy learner must have an opportunity to participate in sport. I think we have clarity in terms of the fact that inter-school sport is a responsibility and falls within the domain of schools. And the reason is very, very obvious. You cannot expect a Department of Sport and Recreation, which is as lean as it is, to be able to provide you with a human resource capacity, to be able to manage that activity across 3,000 schools. We certainly would depend and rely heavily on our educators in those schools, the parents who provide the support, and the learners who participate in those particular activities. But what we should do is agree that there should be minimum code that are offered to every single child. And we should agree that we should improve rapidly in terms of provision of infrastructure and among other things as suggested by the honorable members that we should certainly look at twinning where appropriate. Because twinning occurs, it does already occur at the cognitive, at the intellectual, academic level. In fact, we take many of our programs, especially in this branch here, it relies heavily on twinning. So when you look at the Mootok competitions, for example, you find twinning that takes place between the affluent and the less affluent schools, and they go as a team. When you look at your choirs as well, you find the twin takes place. So there is that reality that exists, and I certainly would encourage and promote and support the expansion of this into our school domain. So I think, Ms. Khonjana, I've spoken about the budget, and I acknowledge with humility the reality, and though it's a legacy of the past, the disproportionate development that occurs, the challenges in rural communities, but what you can take heart from is that as you're building our new schools, you will discover that there are amenities that are provided with every new school that we built over there. And I do think that we should be more creative and innovative, not to say that every single school must have a sporting facility, but we must say that in the vicinity of those schools there must be appropriate sporting facilities that have to be provided for use by the schools and the communities. I think Department of Basic Education, which basically carries 12 of about a quarter of the population of this country, has a duty to work very closely with sport and recreation in our engagement with SALGA through the municipalities. To say to them that you cannot have these amenities and call them community or public amenities when you deny access or you want to basically charge a fee for it. Part of your responsibility and part of the allocation of the budget that you receive is certainly for the provision of and upkeep of these amenities. And therefore you are obliged to do so. So I think the protocol must go beyond, or the memorandum of understanding must go beyond sport and recreation and education, but must include SALGA as a government association. And in that way there we could at least have some kind of clarity whilst we are negotiating or discussing the issues of what we do with the municipal infrastructure grants. Now, the teachers, it's quite interesting, you know, that the issues of teachers, there seems to be a belief that some organizations are unwilling to participate in this extramural activity. I think it's a myth. I personally have engaged with unions all across, all unions, including the biggest union in the country. And they all agree that in terms of the agreement that binds all teachers, they are obliged to provide time for extramural activities. What we must do, and what we must be able to do, is to coordinate and manage that in an appropriate way. It's like, you know, teachers being in school on time, doing the work and tasks. If you give them the break and the gap, they take it. If you provide, be more strict and control it in a more appropriate way, you're able to do it. And we must get that high kind of commitment from the leadership, particularly to say, those educators who have this particular responsibility and try to discharge it, particularly at a time when certain recreation said it will take the responsibility through federations and other means to provide good coaching development for those teachers who fail to take up that opportunity out there, must be subject to certain reaction. You can quote me on that, I just believe that is, but I can tell you quite unequivocally that the unions have said that they are more than happy and willing to support us in this particular drive. Now, that's the theoretical part of the commitment out there. We have to make sure that it becomes a reality and we are able to implement it. Now, I'm trying to just go through the issues about the auditing that was... Well, thank you very much. An audit has already been carried out by sports association, that's number one. Number two, we have the National Education Information Management System, which would be able to tell us within half an hour which schools have amenities and which schools don't. Yeah, it's updated, the updated part, because we had to update it. It's somewhat dated in the sense it's 2 years information, and we've just currently engaged people to complete it. So the uploading is taking place, but that would give us a good sense of where the amenities are. And what we should be doing also as a department is, beginning next year, included in the kind of forms where we basically ask for learner numbers and teacher numbers and so forth, we should ask about amenities. So that 2015 comes, we know precisely what amenities are available, both in terms of infrastructure, but also in terms of equipment. You know, it's so uneven, the availability of equipment, you know, for PE. So I cannot stand here and say to you, listen, I can tell you quite confidently about those books being delivered, but I can't say the same about equipment for PE. And it's something that we have to take responsibility for and deal with much more seriously. I think the first person who commented here, and I wasn't present at the time, spoke about the legacy of apartheid, and we cannot ignore it. It's a reality. It's still going to be with us for a while until we can basically treat our parents with opportunities. I think the definitions about inter-school and inter-school is important, but I think what is encouraging and what we should basically take heart from is in the past administration, and we're continuing with that in this administration, members who serve on the Portfolio Committee of Education will certainly bear us out. That for the first time in the history of the country, the ministry and the senior management of the Department of Basic Education meet every quarter with all district directors in the country. And I can give you this assurance that at the next meeting of district directors, includes district directors from this province. In other words, it's apolitical, it's about the challenges of education in our country. We must put this item on the agenda. And I think our team, from DG from Sport and Recreation, the acting DG from Basic Education, must work out a presentation that we could make jointly to the district directors. Because unless we get sport down to that level there, it's going to be theoretical, because provinces are going to say, well, we're waiting, expectation of the districts are not performing. And if we strengthen our districts and our circuit in terms of the implementation plan, I think we can gain from it, and that's certainly a suggestion that I would like to make. I also, instead of responding, I also want to suggest certain solutions. And one of the solutions that I would like to speak to in terms of how we can manage this memorandum of understanding better, it would mean that at the highest level there has to be a dedicated technical team, a steering team that drives this particular program, designated by the DGs of both departments and overseen by the DGs, by the way. At the second level, at the provinces, there must be a steering committee between Departments of Education and Departments of Sport and Recreation, overseen again by political principals. At the district level, we must have a dedicated person who is responsible for the implementation of sport in terms of PE and in terms of sport codes. And certainly what we should be saying to our district councils and our municipalities, that they should form part of that task. Because within the district, your districts play an important role because there's still several municipalities and appropriate arrangement could be made, but within municipalities they have a particular responsibility. And they have to be part of the conversation and part of the solution. And that would be a suggestion that I would certainly want to make, and certainly I don't do so on any mandate or authority of the executive. I do so from a very private and personal view, having heard the voices that have come from our members both in both houses, the selectors from the NCOP as well as the National Assembly. One of the colleagues raised the issue about the curriculum defines 7 hours, but what about the extracurricular? The extracurricular activity is defined in terms of the agreement with the labor unions, and it is binding. And I just really think it's a matter of enforcing it in a way that's organized. But if we don't have an organized plan, it's very, very difficult to enforce. And that is why if we can basically take it right to the districts and make sure it becomes a core activity that we could promote. So I'm not arguing with the spirit of what is being said. I'm saying, yes, if we want to develop sport and we want to make it truly developmental, then we have to do that. But the secret of this also goes beyond what we do as a Department of Education and Sport Recreation. It's the responsibility of federations. Federations can't basically be perpetuating privilege as they've done in the past. So basically you would have some kind of open intervention in your historically black areas, your rural and township areas, but the real activity, the real program, the real amenities are provided for the privileged schools. So unless you are African and you are in a privileged school, you're going to have no chance in terms of getting access to it. I think that we have to revisit how federations basically allocate their resources and provide this particular opportunity. And again, the voice of education and sport of education must be very, very powerful into it. Because we can't transform transform a sporting arena without being very bold about it. And I know that the Minister of Sport and Recreation has been non-compromising and unequivocal about transformation. He says the way it is. Take it this way, and this is what we said we're going to be doing, and that is what we should be doing. Because colleagues who have been long enough in Parliament will know how we had to argue and fight for Herschel Gibbs to be in part of the Senate, how we had to fight and argue for Asim Amla. And Herschel Gibbs was regarded as one of the best-ranking one-day cricketers in the world. Asim Amla is now the captain of the national side, not on the basis of talent, on the basis of merit. But even though they had ability, there were barriers that were put in place. So whether we talk cricket, whether we talk rugby or other sport, we must be conscious of the fact that there is vested interest. It is not from political parties, but it is from individuals that manage these particular codes historically that become gatekeepers. So it's not to say that the DA or the IFP or anybody else would be opposed to transformation. They would express themselves. The training, for example, is not coming from the ANC, it's coming now from the DA. But at the same time, we could say, who are the gatekeepers out there? We've seen that at universities, we have to transform that, we've seen it at various institutions, and unless we transform those particular areas of endeavor, we're not going to succeed. Now, the other reality is your urban versus your rural. And we have to find creative ways of doing more for our rural people. Let me show you how complex this problem is. 6 of the 9 provinces have transport, square transport located with the departments of transport. 3 of them are with the Department of Education. So when we say education and sport recreation is organized transport, we tend to forget, hey, what about Department of Transport? So we have to have that conversation. What about nutrition? You know, we started with nutrition with a few million. Now we feed 9.2 million children every day. That's a wonderful achievement, every day. Now we're saying expand those meals to the other learners. And indeed, we must examine that possibility. We are constrained in terms of this. How do we examine it and how can we change it? Because some provinces were thinking about providing breakfast, but I think sport, you need the energy, if you're going to have a sports ministry, you need a particular energy that the child should have in order to participate in sport. So rather than a 5-day option, you might want to look at a 1-day option, and could we suggest that we put it for discussion with the district directors and say, what is their thinking, because they are on ground and they could form both Department of Basic Education and Sport and Recreation. I always think I broadly covered with it. But before I conclude, Chairperson, you know, we've lost two very, very important people in the sporting arena. We've lost an athlete of note, an Olympian, as well as an excellent goalkeeper, who died under very
distressing circumstances. I don't know if you've died before I've arrived here, but if we haven't done so through the chairs, may I just ask that we observe a moment of silence in memory of these wonderful, wonderful sports persons who made such a huge difference. So if you've done so, I certainly want to endorse that silence that you and thank you for doing that, because it's been a great loss to us. I think, and so I conclude by saying, we have a lot of work to do. I think sport and recreation and a basic education, as well as the departments of education, must get the act together, as you correctly say, so put it in plain language, and that we haven't done sufficient, and we've got to be much more serious and urgent about our business. So thank you for the opportunity and the invitation, Chairperson, but I can assure you that from our side, and I have Dr. Huttus seated next to me, who's responsible for that branch, we will do our level best to ensure that this becomes a reality in the lives of our children. Thank you.
Thank you. Deputy Minister, thank you so much. We also have the third one, a female boxer, professional one, who was hospitalized and now has passed on. We've done what we are doing that we must do. Thank you, Deputy Minister. Honorable members, want to add the entire department, because I wanted to tell you that I didn't see that we do have the CEO of SAGE in this problem that they've been telling us of this doping and the testing in the schools. If you allow me that I must just give him to tell us how now are you feeling that the department is giving us this report. I know that the doping code is going to be adopted or whatever. Say something, I didn't recognize you, but I'm suspecting that today we are also an important stakeholder in these two committees. Just about your 3 or 4 minutes, tell us. Thank you, Mr. Gallagher.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I don't think I'll take longer than even 3 or 4 minutes, because I have heard the deliberations before. It's obviously very encouraging. I got the part of the Deputy Minister's comments, and work has been done in terms of amending the legislation for the Schools Act, and we have recognized the constraints of both the Drug-Free Sports Act and the Schools Act, and through the Department of Sport and Department of Basic Education, there's been a lot of work done in the last year in terms of getting to a nexus that we can deliver on a drug testing service and prevention program in our schools. I've also heard part of the Director General of Education's presentation, and one of the very encouraging parts, recognizing that drug testing is not the panacea to the problem, but it is the prevention and education, and mention was made of the early intervention, and then you also spoke about focusing on the development of the young and clear treatment and intervention. And as the Honourable Chairperson will recall, when you called me to Parliament a couple of months ago, we had to deal with one of our national athletes that fell through the cracks through drug abuse, where our hands were tied in terms of our mandate, in terms of allocation of resources. We couldn't provide the portfolio committee with clear directives on clear treatment intervention for this athlete. We're very encouraged with that. But the chairman, through the Department of Sport and Department of Basic Education, there has been a lot of work over the past year in terms of getting clearer legislation so that in terms of a jurisdiction and mandate, we can deliver on that service. Thank you.
Thank you. Are you happy that you did? Okay.
Thank you, Chair. I'll answer the issue of how much money do we have the budget. We have a budget of 1 billion, 525 million of which goes to the provincial departments responsible for sport as a conditional grant, and 270
Million Boosters Sport Bodies, the sport federations, Charu, SAFA, and all of those. And we remain with 205 million for operations, including salaries, rentals, and we still have to give save money and boxing South Africa, and every other thing that we then do is done from the 205. So that's the budget we have. But of importance is that since 2012, we, in the money we give to provinces, there are 525 million. 40% of all of that is ring fence for school sport. And within it, a further, once we give the province 40% of their budget as part of that they can only use in school sport, we do further divisions and further incentives within that 40%. And 30% of which is dedicated to supporting no fee paying schools, actually, as well as other rural schools with transportation to participate in tournaments and so on. Obviously, the money is not enough to cover all schools, but it does go a bit of a long way in that regard. And we also bring 20% of that money towards training of educators in this regard to supplement the resources that the CAPSITA has. And the CAPSITA itself, with the money that it's currently pushing, the shortfall, our calculation is that the shortfall is 450 million a year. This would need 450 million a year for 20 years of the sports plan to be able to reach the right ratios in this regard. Let me now touch on the issues that were raised by Honorable Mbonjani about how much we give to the teacher unions. We are by law, we can't give teacher unions money. They are not sports stakeholders or recognized sport bodies on which we can give transfers. And the regulations of Treasury gives us an applicable to us. We cannot give the unions unless we accredit them as sport delivery agents or as otherwise. And that's really not in their core main business, and therefore we give no money to them. The issue that was raised about the support for local government, I think this has been touched upon by the Deputy Minister in respect to the sport facilities. But I must ask them to cover a second part, not of the MIG grant, but the issue of the rental of sport facilities for use. This is a big challenge. We met with the facilities managers of municipalities, and we also hosted in 2012 the first municipal conference on sport and recreation. All municipalities have now passed resolutions except the ones here in the Western Cape. All of them have now agreed with us that it will not be feasible to give the facilities for rental for free at all. But we agreed with them that we should have open days, days on which they open up their facilities for community use for free, and that they promote sport and mass participation on those activities with primary focus being given on school sports. That, as you may know, and the plethora of letters we now received, both from sport federations as well as local sport councils, the Western Cape municipalities have said that it's impractical for us to hope that they must open up the facilities for free. I've rejected this conference I don't know how many times. I also came to resolve the issue between them and SAIGI in South Africa on the use of the velodrome, which is now privatized. And the challenge is that it is the only velodrome in the country in which we used to prepare athletes for international tournaments. And we had the tournament, the Commonwealth Games, and our cyclists needed time to prepare, and they were not given the opportunity to do so. And cycling South Africa was told that it has to pay, and the city of Cape Town would not budge, and we had to arrive at some compromise of sorts that they opened up. So the municipalities in the country and all the other provinces have now agreed to the principle of open days, Wednesdays for school sport and Saturdays for community sport. And although some of them, like Johannesburg, indicate that they would not be able to open up expensive facilities, so to say, but they do open community facilities. So it's the type of arrangement that we think is a middle ground of municipalities that are under pressure to collect revenue and to maintain the facilities with that revenue, vis-a-vis the promotion, the mandate constitutionally of having to promote sport and recreation. So I think it's a fine balance there. And if we can get all municipalities in the country agree to that middle ground, then we would have made a major breakthrough in as far as promotion of sport is concerned. Otherwise, we will soon be forced to declare an intergovernmental dispute with the municipalities in the Western Cape. If that doesn't happen, it is not ideal for one part of government to take the other to court or otherwise, but I think if need be, that's what we would have to do, because constitutionally they have a responsibility to promote sport and to avail their facilities. The other issue that was raised, which I think we should also cover in this regard, is the issue pertaining to the what we do, who's going to pay the extra charges. Honorable Musi has raised this matter for the sport focus schools. Look, the conversation is still happening between us and basic education about how exactly we will resource and staff this, but we are borrowing this from the model of arts and culture, and we know that arts and culture has, in some schools, not all specialized arts and culture teachers who do the work in this regard, and we want to apply the same model. We envisage that with the character sport focus schools, that's where we speak only of the expertise involved in as far as lead coaching is concerned. But we do not envisage the same arrangement for all other schools. And for that reason, that is why we are saying that in all other schools, we just need to train the teachers in those schools to do it as part of what the deputy minister say is the responsibility to do extramural activities. And I think that is the premise which we move from in this regard. Let me now address the other issues that were raised, which are also quite key in as far as the sport focus schools are concerned. Honorable Motega indicates that we must indicate clearly the rural and the divide between the sport focus schools, and that if all these schools are in urban areas, then we are not achieving the transformation objective. I think on this issue we'd like to differ. We move from a very practical point of view. The criteria on which we should select the specialized schools is quite clear. First and foremost, these schools must have a rich tradition of play sport, and they must also be blessed up with facilities already. This is the first part, because these are not all the schools we are talking about. The 890 designated schools are only schools where we take all talented learners and route them there to those specific schools. But if we were to try and start these schools from scratch, the resources would not be there. So I think we must start where we are most strongest. The condition that we put, however, is that the school governing body must agree to those conditions we put forward. And it actually has got to pass specific resolutions adopting that code that we designate as a code that school will play. That's the first part. The second part, that school governing body also has got to pass a special resolution that agrees to the relaxation or it's a recruitment policy, because we should let some of the learners in December by the tournament, but by that time, many schools have already finished their selections for next year. So when we get these talented kids and we want them to come to your school, if you say we are finished with the recruitment and we are not taking any more children, then where should these children go to? So you have to admit that you will reserve some spaces, and fortunately many of these schools would not disadvantage them. It will not be the case that they have 10 spaces and now they've got a class of 30 children instead of 40. Where do they get their extra income? Because they always have long waiting lists of parents who want to put their kids in there. So if they reserve 10 spaces and we send only 8, they can always take 2 more kids from their long waiting list to make up for the numbers in January. And the other key thing related here too is that some of those children, they may be highly talented in sport, but they are not necessarily so talented in academia. So you may find that is a learner who is a 60% pass rate, but he will not give you a B in maths or whatever, but he's highly talented on the sport. So if your requirement is to admit only those with a B in maths, then you disadvantage the specific learner from coming in. And from that point of view, your admission criteria must also be a bit flexible. Obviously, we insist that the learner must still pass. Whether he passes with a 55 or 63, as long as he passes and he progresses and he performs well on the sporting field, then the ministerial sport bursary will remain there and will keep on supporting that learner, and the schools can provide support in that regard. So I think it is simply the issue of economics and practicality of saying that let's accredit the schools that already have the facilities as a start.
But where we have found historically disadvantaged schools having the capacity and like Dale College in the Eastern Cape, like Rosina Sidibale in Johannesburg, we have accredited those schools. We have also gave them the possibilities that they can. So this must be distinguished between the support we give to rural schools. And here we insist that the money that we give to provinces, that 50% of that money must support the non-paying schools and rural schools. And that we are not compromising about. And I think such distinction must be made between the generalist schools that we provide equipment, attire, sporting facilities, and all of those things, vis-a-vis the specialized schools. And I think the difference must be there. And should the school try and not allow a previously disadvantaged learners from coming in, we simply have got to disengage with them. And I think that's where we pursue the issue of transformation from that point of view. Lastly, the only thing that I would think that we need to address is the issue of what was raised by Honorable Malachi of first quarter is an obstacle to training of teachers and whether we are addressing the issue of learner transport. Look, the issue of SASCOG, there has been an issue of who has to do the training. Is it basic education? Is it the country or is it SASCOG itself? And where should the money be located? And there was a lot of wrangling about this issue. And SASCOG saying that the coaching framework is there, sort of, and they are the custodians of it. But we argue that it doesn't necessarily mean that then they must be the only training authority. And that we think that the more people can train, and provinces can train themselves, whether DVE or sport and recreation, or whether it is a private training provider, as long as they provide the same quality training accredited by a FITA on that, then that is the best way to go. So, in essence, anybody should be able to train, and these providers registered with the FITA should, and I think that principle has now been accepted. However, in compromise, we have also agreed that we will place all the money with SASCOG for training to run the training program. So they would now, we have now established a committee that has basic education, that has ourselves, that has higher education, that also has CAPSITA and SASCOG that looks at the training program. And so from next year, we would be able to provide the training. The provinces too would also be able to subsidize the training with the money that we ring fence for them to provide training for their own teachers. So if all of us put in the resources together, we calculated that we'll be able to move from the current output of about 3,500 teachers a year to at least just 7,000. It's a far cry from the 17,000 we have to produce, but at least it's almost double of what we are currently producing. Thanks.
Thank you, Chairperson. I don't think that we must take follow-up questions, but if any other member wants to do so, I'll give you the chance. I'm showing one hand, Honorable Mutega, Honorable Basson, just brief to the point, I'll summarize what we've done and what we're thinking to do after the shooting.
Thanks, sir. I think the issue of how many of these special schools are in urban and how many are in rural is not yet answered. The explanation has been there, but there's no answer exactly to that. And the other thing is just I'm not impressed because I think the fund donor schools will remain the privileged schools, and those disadvantaged, previously disadvantaged schools will still remain like that. Thank you.
Another question?
In this post, sporting coach, you will find that Neboy is neglected. It's not so sponsored, more especially those who never. And the age group that the department consider most are under 13 and under 17. Then there's that middle group under 15, that is sometimes just on the borderline, I don't know. What do you do on that? Thank you.
I was not aware that we'll be having new questions, but because this is our meeting, we cannot not ask what else. Did you can continue the scope?
We will simply submit a list of all already declared spot focus schools with their addresses to Honorable Muteka so he can see where the schools are located. But in essence, I thought that I had answered by saying that we do not necessarily emphasize on the issue of urban or rural divide. We look at whether the school has the capacity to do what it has, irrespective of where it is. So, but we will, however, give the list to him with the addresses, and I'm sure such determination can then be made of where the schools are located. But on the issue of Honorable Basson of Nepal, we agree with you. Netball is one of the amateur codes in South Africa, and for a long time it has been, and it's actually so globally. It only we have counted in 4 countries where netball is professionalized fully, and where it has, those countries have been very dominant. But we are also cognizant of the fact that our country, although netball is an amateur, now we are ranked in the top 5 in the world with support that we began giving to netball since 2012. And right now, we are in the process of professionalizing netball as a coach. And we started with sponsorship of SAB on the Bhutan Full Cup. We had the first netball Premier League season this year. And we had 10 teams with Gauteng, having 2 teams and all other provinces, 1 team. And the reason for the 2 teams in Gauteng was asked by the sheer number of players available there, elite players. So this league will now run. We had originally signed with SAB for 3 years, but after the first season, they asked to extend the period to 5 years. So we have a 5-year agreement with them, and they have agreed also to put in more resources into the league. Ultimately, our plan is that from the 6th season, meaning the end of the initial 5-year period, we will then attempt a rotational league, which means that the league will play like all others, home and away, and the teams will travel around. And second to that, we are also thinking that then we will subcontract the players more along the rugby type of setup for national players who play the league. And ultimately, in a space of 10 years, our process is to ensure that and the league is a full-fledged professional league. So we have a turnaround of 10 years to turn the netball around, and when that happens, it means that the players will be full-time contracted to the teams, and they would then play. At the moment, under tutelage, all 10 teams are owned by Netball South Africa, and we have done so to avoid the issue of what's happening in football of club versus country when it comes to national duty, because we have killed the netball for Proteas, and a team that is really doing very, very well. So on that basis, I think our investment in netball has more than tripled in the last 2 years in terms of what we are doing. And in as far as netball is happening at the other junior levels, we have now the baby Spa Proteas and also Amandombazana, that team of under 17. We also began investing in those 2 teams, and you may have seen for the first time Amandombazana beat Malawi, and now they are ranked first on the African continent, and the baby Spa Proteas are now ranked 3rd in the world, so even ahead of England and Jamaica. So we are doing quite well with our national teams in netball. And we have started with Netball South Africa as well this year on the junior championships. And with the schools work there, we have expanded the so-called All Ages, All Girls tournament, which happens on an annual basis. Prior to this, it used to have only about 6,000 schools. We have expanded this to 15,000 schools now, and have added largely township schools into the picture, and we have given them more money for the tournament. We have also expanded beyond this, and we are working now with INF Africa, International Netball Federation, to look at the possibility of repositioning the African Diamond Challenge as a tournament by football terms more like the CHEN. And that it no longer happens on an annual basis, but every 4 years, because that way we can resource it better, and we have agreed with INF that we can host it for about 2 more years. So in order to create heroes for young girls, we have now decided on an ambassador program with netball, and over and above that, we're looking at hosting the World Cup of Fast Five next year in South Africa. So that's the, in summary, the totality of the work we do with netball. I've just brushed through the major brushstrokes, but we are doing a lot of work behind that, including helping them with coaching modules. They do not have formalized coaching modules. We have hired a consultant to write the modules for them, recommended by International Netball Federation. So we are doing a whole host of things to make sure that ultimately in the space of 10 years, we professionalize netball.
On that note, I'm very happy, a former number 7 of netball. I'm very happy for that information. Let me take this opportunity to thank the two departments to come and give us the information that it will assist us when we're doing our oversight. But mostly, let me thank these two committees. When I was listening in the questions, I'm 100% sure that we all wanted this information. And in order that we must make 5 years to say today is better than yesterday. And I'm sitting here, Honorable Malaj, and oh, I'm sorry, madam, Honorable Madad, when we're in the red plane, this list that we are asking from DG, we've been given. But I'll ask you, Usune, by today, must circulate to everyone again. We do have that list that you are asking. It was not crime to ask it. Maybe even others they've taken and they are not aware that the department did give us that list. When I'm saying to everybody who are here today, will be benefiting on the question of the Honorable Matek. So I'm saying that we have called this meeting because as this department, we are calling even any other stakeholders. Some they are feeling that we are too harsh. And some, when we are calling them, not giving the information like these two departments are doing, we do sometimes think that we go back and come when we are ready. And we have been criticized maybe with some constructive others destructive. Because we don't want to be a committee that is not taking a mandate from the two departments, not misquoting them. We don't want to hear from a previous committee saying that, you know what, Department of Sport, we were not doing that. Department of Education, I'm thinking that the Department of Education and Sport is still doing fair engagement on the responses of today. And this is not the first and the last meeting. I'm hoping that coming the time that we're saying that now we are in power, it will come to this kind of a meeting. The action plan that, as what I'm thinking that, will action some of the things to our program. You know, most the action plan of each strategy, every now and then we are reviewing. We've got some information that maybe will be topping up our information that we're having as a committee. Because some of the things we're not aware, and we didn't want to hear from Honorable Musa and Honorable Mponsan. We were all new. And sometimes if we can hear from former members who can be biased, this education, this sport, this is what we wanted as this committee. This committee said to me, call our sister department. The question here, Deputy Minister, it was this question of physical sport and school sport. I'm still saying that once they are presented with a committee and our own committee, we are seeing that there are roles. In both committees, sometimes there is a duplication of some other departments doing the roles of another department. I'm happy that we are together, you will clarify, and you will monitor, and we call every now and again. When we are calling, you must not think that we are thinking that
all is well in sports, all is not well in basic education. With those words, let's action the two committees to their management committee. They must take the information of today and action it in coming back to the committee in order that we must know what we want. By those words, thank you very much, honorable members, and our good departments. Thank you, honorable deputy minister, because we all want to call our minister and deputy minister. They get forward in Apollos. But he knows that we don't want apologies every now and then. Minister, he knows that sometimes I call him in midnight, saying that tomorrow I want you here. It's not because we are disrespecting. It's better that the head of this department, political head, they must be with our DGs and with us. We are implementers. So we don't want to accuse and implement wrong things that a department sometimes says that, hey, these committee members, you are all colleagues. We have been given, Nina, an extra mandate to lead us in the government. But without us, now, Nani, you are nothing. With those words, thank you so much. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you. I'm going to go to the next one. Thank you. Thank you.